Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Week's End, about 2 minutes past the hour on this Friday evening. And here I am, the only live program on the horn for this Friday. I mailed it in last week, and I'm ashamed of myself over that, but I just wasn't feeling real good. But I'm feeling great tonight! And so, let's see what we can do with a Friday evening. You know how I feel about Friday. You know, back before the problem occurred with our telephone processor that we can't afford to have fixed right now, we were doing Front Porch Friday, and you know I can still get two people on at the same time if you want to participate. Just can't do four; it gets a little confusing. So we could have three people's worth of conversation this evening if you want to do that. But at any rate, whatever you want to bring to the table is fine. It's always fine, though. It's not like... I can't stand that right-wing BS of, you know, I'll direct which way this show goes. I'm an egomaniac. I know what we need to talk about. Horse feathers. We'll talk about what you want to talk about, because 9 times out of 10... you've got as much of an idea of what the pulse beat of the nation is as I do. I'm sitting here in the hills. I'm way, 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 way out of the loop. Now, I see some of it coming and going here and there, but a lot of times there's stories I miss and there's stories that you see. And by all means, I want you to bring those to the table, and I sincerely hope you will. You know the phone number. You just heard the phone number, 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. That's both run direct into the same place, so either way is fine by me. Now, email comes into bob@headonradio.com, bob@headonradio.com. That's easy, too. Let's start out with a little something from our good friend, the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman. Eugene is noting a rather important day in history today. And Eugene is good for, always good for knowing what happened on this day in history. And for putting to that little smackerel of data the flesh on the bones, the meat on the bones, that makes it worthy of note. Today, July the 18th, Eugene says, on this day in AD 64, Rome would have made a great music video for Light My Fire. As long as Ed Sullivan wasn't there, I might add, to tell Jim Morrison that he couldn't say, girl, we can only get higher, which he went on to say anyway. But never mind, that's an aside of my own. Eugene knows this is not to compare Nero with Jim Morrison, although I'm not sure who would suffer more by the comparison. If you believe the movie version of Quo Vadis, then Nero started the fire if only to give himself a topic for an epic poem. But then you'd also have to believe that Deborah Kerr would really prefer a frigid corpse like Robert Taylor to the adorable Peter Ustinov. Peter Ustinov was particularly adorable and one of the few things worth waiting for in, what, 1976's Logan's Run? But again, that's me. Back to Eugene. Historians believe that the Great Fire was just a natural calamity. The unfortunate, flammable nature of Rome's crowded wooden tenements. Highly likely. Wood being highly flammable. Yet the imperial government found a scapegoat for the conflagration, a small cult of Jewish schismatics. The cult's numbers would not have totaled enough for an interesting persecution, and the group was so obscure that it should have escaped notice. Only the other Jews were somewhat familiar with it, and they didn't like it much. However, the Romans barely tolerated any Jews. Nero took a particular pleasure in baiting them, sending increasingly more rapacious and cruel governors to ravage Judea. The province finally revolted in 66 A.D., which was not known as 66 A.D. back then, but you know that. So given their general unpopularity in the Hellenized world, Jews would have made a much easier scapegoat for the Great Fire. Why did the imperial government overlook the easier target and sift through all the Jewish sects to persecute one particular group? As we know from this cult's earliest writings, the group was apocalyptic and awaiting the imminent end of the world. It's the end times, Brother Lucius. Yes, Brother Martius. Its Rome congregation, witnessing the imperial city in flames, must have seen this as proof of the end times. With that impression, they would have celebrated the conflagration as their theological fulfillment. So although they had not started the Great Fire, they were probably cheering it on, and their pagan neighbors would have resented that. The subsequent complaints led to the cult's arrest and persecution. The Roman government really thought that these pyrophiles were really guilty. In thought, if not indeed. There's a parallel here. Shortly after September the 11th, 2001, do you remember the number of, and frequently, unfortunately, Sikhs, you know, not Muslims at all? Not that Muslims were deserving, they weren't. But do you remember the number of Sikhs who were dragged out of stores and dragged out of cabs, and kicked, stomped, punched, shot, stabbed, tortured? And then there's that urban myth about the guy who was in the store who was cheering as the towers came down, and the store pulled all of its Coca-Cola and replaced it with Pepsi because the guy who was cheering was a Coca-Cola delivery man. I remember him. I'm sure you do, too. As it turns out, Eugene says, the world did not end. Neither, sadly, did that cult. It simply rescheduled its promised apocalypse to an unspecified time for a savior to be named later, or to arrive later, in the clouds, with trumpets and stuff. So there you have it, our little dose of history. July the 18th, 64 A.D. And of course, next August comes the anniversary, as it does every August, of the destruction of Pompeii. God, I love that kind of stuff. I love that history. I'm sorry, I hope you don't think it's terribly geeky of me, but there's always room in this program for noting something like that, because where we came from defines where we are, and where we are defines where we're going. But try to convince a loyal Bushy of that. But no, the real starting place for the program this evening, as far as I'm concerned, the real starting place is with something that I'm bothered. You know the old saying, there's no such thing as bad publicity? Because it is an old saying, and it's an old saying because it's largely true. There's no such thing as bad publicity. Name recognition is everything. And sometimes when I shine a light on these right-wing freaks, especially the hate mongers who infest the airwaves, I worry that we're just giving them free publicity. But there are other times when I feel like we have to play this stuff so you can hear it, so you can know it, so you can tell others, just as I will tell others, exactly how vicious and hateful and wrong these monsters are. And thus, this evening, we begin with a man who used to do nude hot tub time with Allen Ginsberg. He was that liberal. Who used to write wistful little love postcards to Allen Ginsberg when the writer was out of the country dodging the draft. We begin, in a word, with Michael the Savage Wiener, who 2 days ago turned the lens of, he's on radio, so he doesn't have a lens, but I guess turned the amplification of his hate, the transmission of his hate, upon people who can do nothing about it. Some of those people can't even comprehend that they're being hated, so I guess that's a double bonus for Michael the Savage Wiener. Talkers Magazine, which has its own right-wing bent in the first place, places Michael the Savage Wiener as the number three talker, you know, talk show, talk radio guy in America. Number three. Of him, Flush Flimball, in the recent little bit of obeisance that the New York Times Sunday Magazine did on him, Flimball said, he's not even in my rearview mirror, my friends. Well, give me some more pills. That feels good. Do I have my flight to the Dominican Republic to go and play with my little boy toys set up for me, Mr. Snerdly? Very good. We'll be getting out of here later on my Gulfstream. No, it's Michael the Savage Wiener. And I've heard a lot of hateful, vicious garbage flow out of this human sewer's mouth and into the public airwaves. More than my fair share. But this is, I think, an all-time low. I think this is as low and as hateful. And remember, he was thrown off of what? MSNBC, CNBC? He was thrown off of television for screaming on air at a caller telling him to go suck one and get AIDS and die. So if I'm telling you that this is the lowest I've ever heard the Savage Wiener go, please have some idea of exactly how low I'm talking about. Mighty low. Mighty low. So rather than just sit here and babble about it, why not let you hear it?
Now you want me to tell you my opinion on autism, since I'm not talking about autism?
Yeah, autism. He's going to go after the autistic kids. This is a classy guy.
A fraud, a racket. For a long while, we were hearing that every minority child had asthma. Why did they suddenly? Why was there an asthma epidemic amongst minority children? Because I'll tell you.
So it's autism is a fraud and a racket, and he's going to prove it by beating up on asthmatic minority kids. And around the country, there are literally millions of people, your fellow Americans, who are sitting there saying, that's right, Michael, that's right.
You're white. The children got extra welfare if they were disabled, and they got extra help in school. It was a money racket. Everyone went in and was told, when the nurse looks at you, you go, I don't know, the dust got me. So everyone had asthma from the minority community. That was number one. Now the illness du jour is autism. You know what autism is? I'll tell you what autism is in 99% of the cases.
Now, here's a guy practicing medicine on the air who has no license to practice medicine. Because he's going to tell you what autism is. Don't worry, there won't be any complaints to the AMA or the California Board of Medicine. There won't be any complaints. And Savage will go on day after day after day, running his ads and spewing his filth and abusing the airwaves that you own with what you're about to hear.
It's a brat who hasn't been told to cut the act out.
Autism is a brat that hasn't been told to cut the act out.
That's what autism is. What do you mean they scream and they're silent? They don't have a father around to tell them, don't act like a moron, you'll get nowhere in life. Stop acting like a putz.
So, and you know, when you try to crawl inside a right-winger's skull and follow what passes for a train of thought, it can be pretty dirty and pretty nasty and make you, I've heard this three or four times already before we opened the program. And, wow, I want to shower in pure Listerine, okay, or Lysol or something. I want to put a nose clip on and duct tape my mouth and just be dipped by the heel in an entire vat of hand sanitizer from my exposure to this. Do you have this so far? Autism is an act that is perpetrated because these are little putz children. And he's already associated them with minority children, so they're little minority putz children who, because they're being raised, presumably from his words, by single mothers, are misbehaving and being brats. Got it so far? Good.
Straighten up. Act like a man. Don't sit there crying and screaming, idiot. Autism. Everybody has an illness. If I behaved like a fool, my father called me a fool.
Pity his father's dead. Maybe he'd be calling him every day of his life and saying, you right-wing puke, you punk, you fool. The hell's wrong with you? Why don't I come out there and just slap you upside the head like I did all during your childhood? Because, see, that's the problem. If you listen to the Savage Wiener long enough, you'll find out that Michael Savage, the Savage Wiener, Michael Wiener, that's his real name, Michael the Savage Wiener has real daddy problems. I'm talking about Freudian daddy problems. I'm talking about decades on the couch with a psychoanalyst daddy problems. We're talking about putting the psychoanalyst's kids through Harvard Medical School on just the money he would pay alone. Daddy psychiatric problems. A little Oedipus.
And he said to me, don't behave like a fool. The worst thing, he said, don't behave like a fool. Don't be anybody's dummy. Don't sound like an idiot. Don't act like a girl. Don't cry. That's what I was raised with. That's what you should raise your children with.
Don't act like a girl. It was barely 24 hours ago that Mark Levine, honors grad, Mark Levine, all-around smart guy, was opining from the midst or the depths of a Tylenol binge that most right-wing so-called conservative problems can be traced back to misogyny, jealousy, and fear of women. Sounds to me like Mark Levine, done been vindicated. Let's try this again.
Screaming, idiot. Autism. Everybody has an illness. If I behaved like a fool, my father called me a fool. And he said to me, don't behave like a fool. The worst thing, he said, don't behave like a fool. Don't be anybody's dummy. Don't sound like an idiot. Don't act like a girl. Don't cry. That's what I was raised with. That's what you should raise your children with. Stop at the sensitivity training. You're turning your son into a girl, and you're turning a nation into a nation of losers and beaten men. That's why we have the politicians we have.
Huh? What? I told you, trying to follow right-wing thought can be a real challenge. Autism is a fraud and a... just work with me here. Autism is a fraud and a racket because minority children got assistance because they had asthma because Michael Savage's daddy told him not to be a fool and slapped him around a little bit, which ought to happen to everybody so that the boys won't turn into girls and we won't have bad politicians. F me running. I'm going to turn the little microphone off, and I'm going to break my little fast, and I'm going to open me up a bottle of tequila, and I'm going to drink that thing upright so maybe I can understand what that idiot's babbling about. Sorry. But see, this is important. This isn't just pointing out that this guy's a dick. This is what is informing the political discussion in this country today. I go back and I remind you, for every hour that you hear on the horn, for every hour you hear on Nova M, for every hour you hear on Air America, for every hour of every liberal, decent, moral, ethical, left-leaning talker you hear, there are 2,000 plus hours of what you just heard. And that is why we fight the battles that we fight with our foot in a bucket, uphill, both ways. That is why. And we don't just fight the battle about autism or asthma, dumb self-made SOB. Come down here and live next to a mountaintop removal operation for a little while, Savage Wiener, and let's hear if you go, or maybe you won't be able to go, because your damn kidneys will get burned up from the poison in the water. You sorry bastard. You merciless afterbirth. God almighty. But remember, for every one of those 2,000 plus hours, there are God knows how many millions of Americans listening to it. And they don't just go, yeah, that's right, Michael. They go, that's right, Michael. And that's right, Michael, dear hey. And Michael, Mom, you've got it, dude. All over America. This is a disease. And we're trying to offer an antidote. And beyond an antidote, we're trying to offer a vaccine. But this is the fight we fight against. I gotta say, and I'm sorry, this sounds a little, but it, whatever it is. But sometimes I know that you guys who support the horn sit back and go, you know, I could use that $5, $10, $15, $20, $25, $100. I could use that for something else. And you wonder if you're doing the right thing. You're doing the right thing. Now, if we can just get a few more thousand people to do the right thing, will begin to fight back against this filth. Because this, when you press that PayPal button, or when you use that snail mail address, this is the filth you're fighting. This is the garbage.
Now you want me to tell
fighting.
You my opinion on autism, since I'm not talking about autism? A fraud. A racket. For a long while, we were hearing that every minority child had asthma. Why did they suddenly... Why was there an asthma epidemic amongst minorities?
Can you imagine that there is an actual market in the United States that is supported by advertisers producing so-called consumer goods for race baiting all across the country? Mind-boggling to me. Because there's just a little bit left in me of that little kid who went every Sunday and listened to the solid teaching of the little old blue-haired ladies in the basement of the Southern Baptist Church. And what they taught was right on, because what they taught was the love thy fellow man part of Christianity. And we didn't get to the confusing, hateful, bigoted, nasty stuff till we went upstairs. But that stuff was right on. But I guess there's no market in America for love thy neighbor as thyself, or do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or judge not lest ye yourself be judged. But there is apparently, among the people who sell dishwashing detergent and laundry detergent and Preparation H and motor cars and this and that and every last consumer good you could imagine and beverages and blah, 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 blah. There's a hell of a market in hate. But we're not going away. We're not running away. We don't run away from fights. We'll stand there and punch and counterpunch. Because, you know what? Like you, I love this country too much to abandon it to a goose-stepping fascist hate-monger like the Savage Wiener. I just do. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh. I guess we lost him. You'll have that sometimes. What do you mean they're screaming, they're silent? You don't have a father around to tell them, don't act like a moron, you'll get nowhere in life. You know, there are celebrities out there, people of note, who have autistic children. And they lead causes in fights against autism. And they raise money to fight autism. And they fund science that hopes to either cure or prevent future onsets of autism. And how... I can't imagine what it would be like to have that kind of stature to stand up against a punk thug like this and call him out. Because he should be called out. He shouldn't be able to show his face in public without rotten vegetables flying at him from every quadrant. He shouldn't be able to walk down the street in San Francisco where he lives without people pointing at him and catcalling and hissing and booing and driving him from polite society. This is the kind of talk that got camps built and showers funded, that got the Zyklon B transported and the trenches dug and the ovens stoked. This is that. And we tolerate it, and with a very few exceptions, the Horn, Nova M, just a handful of people, With a very few exceptions, we not only tolerate it, but we won't even fight back against it. Bless Media Matters for America's heart for the time that they spend ferreting out this garbage. And they put it up there, and it's there for people like me to use. And they hope that people like me will use it. But the problem is that there aren't enough people like me. There aren't enough people like Malloy. There aren't enough people like Guy James. There aren't enough people like Mark Levine, Peter Godbold, John Fox. There aren't enough. But when there aren't enough, you do with what you got. Because if you walk away from it, you just know that you've actually not only acquiesced to the evil, but you've also aided in its spread by not rejecting it and calling it out for the filth that it is. One more time. Interesting night on the phone so far. Asthma? There's no getting around asthma. And we know, unlike... Now, please, bear in mind, the savage wiener, for all his hate, is at the core of his being, what he is just another pathetic, lonely, corporate flack. He doesn't have any friends. His family barely speaks to him. He's got a dog. If you listen to this program, you hear me talking about my family. If you listen to Michael the Savage Wiener's program, you hear him talking about his dog. It's all he's got. The Savage Wiener has a dog, and Flush Flimball lives in a 24,000-square-foot mansion with a cat that would leave if it had a choice. But they don't need friends, because they've got a check coming from corporate America every blessed day. And so they say things like, autism is a fraud and a racket. Because the fact of the matter is, a great deal of autism, and it's odd, we were talking about this just last night, a great deal of the autism was foisted upon American parents by corporate America. Just as a great deal of the asthma that is burning up the lungs of our youngest generations was foisted on America by people like Massey Energy and Peabody Coal and Arch Coal. And you know what? As long as they've got savage wieners out there talking to millions of Americans, convincing them that everybody whose children are sick just have something wrong with them that is more mental and spiritual than physical. Michael Savage Wiener is the poster child for everything that is wrong with broadcasting in America. And America is so busy and so strapped that there's not even time. There's not even time for the parents of the autistic children to get the pitchforks and the torches and the barrels of boiling oil and go and march around the building of his syndicator, demanding none of this namby-pamby apology BS. Pull that dirty, rotten, self-made SOB from the air and never let him get near a microphone again. Oh, but Bob, what about the First Amendment? Well, fine, let him finance it himself. Let him take his hat in his hand and ask the people who listen to his filth to support his filth. Then he has a commensurate right to exercise his First Amendment rights. But he, by God, is pumping filth over my airwaves and your airwaves, and he is abusing. He is abusing the license that you and I grant to the radio stations that carry him. He is abusing that every time the little mic light turns red. And you know it, and I know it. Marty says, it says a lot about what San Francisco really isn't, that someone like him actually defiles that place. Bless Spocko. Yeah, Marty, thanks for reminding me. Bless Spocko for trying to get him shut down in the face of his being sued in retaliation. Spocko ran Melanie Morgan, that hateful creature, completely out of San Francisco. Here's hoping Spocko keeps up the fight and turns up the heat on the savage wiener. Here's hoping. Now, do you want to go find his sponsors and tell them? You know, frankly, this is on a par with, if not worse than, the Imus business. I am told by a listener that, Savage better hope, fill in the blank, never hears him do his autism bit, or blank, will happily drive to San Francisco and kill him upon arrival. Seems to me it would be a matter of self-defense, because Michael Savage is inciting people. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Rick.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
Netroots Nation. I'm doing good.
Yeah, you are down at Netroots Nation, down in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, doing really, really good. Everybody seems to be having tons of fun. Awful lot of discussions going on. Ran into a few nice people. I'll tell you, it's quite liberating to be here in Texas among so many liberals.
You know, it's got to be downright incongruous. Well, but you're in Austin, Rick. I mean...
That's true. That is the island of blue within this stinking sea of red.
I mean, if they'd held it in Houston or Dallas or maybe Lubbock.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I had a couple people to interview, but you ran it, young man.
I'm sorry. Well, see, I kept pushing the button, and I've got this little light, and it looked like a busy signal was coming back at me. I'm terribly sorry.
No. Every single time, and we're just lucky it didn't happen this time, but every time that you tried to click in, the sound that the click-in makes disconnects the phone, my phone.
Well.
So anyway.
Darn the luck. Who are you talking to so far?
Well, I'm talking to Ray Vaughn, and let's see, I'm about to grab a couple of panelists as soon as they finish, and I think we just got hung up. Okay, good.
No, I'm right here.
A couple panelists. We have, a unique few people here. The issue brought up now is mostly what has the net been doing, and how have we been able to achieve getting information out away from the mainstream media. And Jane Fleming, hers was mostly on women issues related to the net and how she feels that there needs to be more involved. And you and I have discussed that issue before.
Yes.
About how you'd like to have at least a couple, one or two, of your on-air talents being female. Also, then we went to Andrew Slack, and he was just wonderful. He went through an entire diatribe about how the net relates to Harry Potter.
Well, that had to be fun.
I've got to record his. And then the other panelist, who happens to be silent, Marcus Wims, and he hasn't said over two words since he's been up there, so I'm not sure what his point of view is on anything. But that's what's going on now, and we have moved back the Speaker of the House's little presentation. It's been moved up, actually, to 8:30. So I guess she wants to get in and get out as fast as possible, because I think someone finally told her that these are real liberal Democrats here, and she may be scared to death.
Well, having never seen one, having never seen a liberal, she might be a little nervous.
She may be. But I've heard some rumors about some of the questions going to be asked, such as, did you take an oath of office? On that oath of office, did you understand what it meant? I love picking up snippets. Can't get anybody to go on air with it, though, but
that's the thing. That's part and parcel of what I was just talking about, Rick. We got to get people to go on air with it. We got to get people to speak truth. We've got to get people to do that because we're getting our butts whipped right now. You know that.
I keep mentioning
that number, Rick. That 2,000 plus hours for every day, for every hour of liberal talk, that there's 2,000 hours of right wing talk.
Right.
Now, how are we ever going to beat those people back?
Is by getting in tooth and nail.
Yeah, and understanding that you fight bullies with bully tactics.
Sometimes use a baseball bat on the bull.
Well,
that's an inside joke, guys.
you being the Texan that you are, and a fan of things Western that you are, I imagine you probably somewhere in your life sat down and spent a couple of hours watching that wonderful Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid movie with Robert Redford and Paul Newman.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Remember the scene with the fight? Now, we're not going to have any eye gouging like this.
No eye gouging. No stab. Yeah.
Not going to have any kicking. Now, let's fight. That's what we've got to learn to do with these right-wing thugs.
Amen.
Because, see, Michael, the Savage Wiener's got a dump button, and nobody's going to beat him head-to-head because he controls the terms of the discussion.
Right.
And that's why he won't go out, and you will not see him debating someone from the other side head-to-head.
That's the way he'd stand up to it. Most of these Republicans are like that. Even the ones running for local office, like Mr. Cassidy. I think you talked to him the other day. We cannot get his opponent to debate him. Can't do a thing in the world to pull that boy out.
Nope, he's gonna hide in his Saddam spider hole and just hope that his money can carry the day.
Well, they have a rodeo parade, and in the rodeo parade I have Ernie walking and handing out cards and talking to people, and then I got somebody in front of him with a nice sign that says, please stop and talk to Ernie. He's not on his high horse, and then right behind him is Sid Miller on his horse.
His high horse. Hot diggity. See, that's fighting back, Rick. That's fighting back.
I don't even pull punches. I'm not one of those. Once they're down on the ground, you don't walk away. You get an extra kick first.
You're darn right. Once they're on the ground, that's when the fun starts. That's when the stomping and the pointy-toed boots come in handy.
Amen.
I mean, they put points on those boots for a reason.
Not just for stamping out the cockroaches in the corner.
No, sir. They work real good on ribs, too.
Amen. Well, anyway, this is going really well. I'm very interested in seeing how it's going to turn out tomorrow. I think there's going to be some anger released, and I will try to have my tape rolling at the time, and I'll try to get as many more interviews as I can tonight before everybody starts spreading out of fear.
Well, beautiful, beautiful. And, Rick, if I may, I hope, obviously, there won't be a Rick's Place brand new this weekend because you're kind of tied up being a correspondent. But I hope we'll get to hear some of this maybe on the Rick's Place, say, a week from Saturday evening.
I'm planning to open up the entire mic and letting everything run with just a few comments in between. It should be fun if I don't screw this thing up with the new technology.
Well, just don't open the back or it ruins the film, okay?
Yeah, I won't do that. I'll get it anymore. But it may be okay.
Hey, and check your email if you get a chance, because our other correspondent down there, Texas Betsy, sent her cell phone number and asked me to forward it along to you, which I have done.
Okay.
So that you can give her a jingle, and maybe y'all can get together, compare notes, and maybe even form a little strategy for dealing with who wants to talk to who about what.
Sounds wonderful. We can go for that.
And, oh, hey, at the risk of maybe speaking a little bit out of turn, there's something I mentioned to you in my email that I may as well go ahead and mention on the air. And that is, and I'm really excited about it. It looks like the Horns' trip to Denver is back on.
Oh, you're kidding.
It looks like we're back on. We're going to go and make it a dual outreach sort of a thing. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch have decided that there's not going to be a better outreach opportunity to tell people from all around the around America who don't know about mountaintop removal than what's going on in Denver. And there is something going on next to the convention where there will be complete media access and a great bit. It's literally called a big tent. And we are, so we've gotten the go-ahead from, Coal River headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to, hope to finalize the stuff with the folks in Denver. And,
wonderful.
And it'll, Guy James will be inside the convention hall. If everything comes together this way, I'll be in the big tent. And, Mark Levine will be either in the convention hall or in the big tent. And maybe, you know, at some point, maybe everybody will be in the big tent. Because, you know, I have a feeling that's where all the fun's going to be anyway.
Amen. Well, this could be fun. This really could.
I'm psyched. I am psyched and I am stoked.
Well, I can imagine.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, what you're doing, and it's all of a piece. Because what you're doing down there at Netroots Nation, what Texas Betsy's doing at Netroots Nation, what we hope to accomplish in Denver, is all of the same sort of thing. Letting people know that there is a means of fighting back and fighting back in the same medium that that thugs and punks like the Savage Wiener use.
And we're in a medium that they have no concept of how to operate.
Oh, yeah, because they just, yeah, they're not so good with the blogosphere.
Amen. Well, it's going to be tons of fun. I can't wait to see what happens.
All right, set them up and knock them down, Rick.
Okay, I'm going to get up and see if I can get a couple of interviews real fast before they're all gone.
All right, take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I guess it was the background noise that was fooling me into thinking that there was no... But that is Horn psychoanalyst Rick Goodner, he of Rick's Place, which comes your way every Saturday evening about 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, and then rotates along with the Rick Smith Show and Night Sounds with Billy Shears all weekend long. So if you don't catch it on the first go-round, you will have a chance to hear it again at some point during the weekend. And all you got to do is be a little bit patient. So there you have it. And Rick and Betsy are down there chasing down. Betsy's blogging like crazy. Rick is grabbing audio and interviewing folks and with his own charming down-home Texas ways, having conversations, and I love seeing this stuff come together. I just love seeing this stuff come together. So, I'm sorry. When I saw the autism thing with the Savage Wiener, it kind of shot everything else I had planned for the evening right out the window. Because it just grabbed me so hard that I almost shook. Because I know people who deal with this. I know people who deal with autism. And I know the fights they've had to fight. Fights to get children treated with even bare minimum dignity inside a public school system. Fights for medical treatment. Fights for insurance coverage. And yeah, these are families that have mamas and daddies. Some are families that have only one parent. Some of the things that I've seen are with children who had neither and were left in the custody of the state. And without exception, I have seen parents rip their souls to tiny shreds. Trying. And to have a worm like the Savage Wiener, to have him, whose best effort was to raise one son to the level that he could take some of his money and set his son up in business selling Rockstar energy drink, degrade and denigrate and minimize and marginalize those efforts is almost more than I can tolerate. And it is a challenge to me not to say what I really, really think about Michael Savage and the life that Michael Savage, the Savage Wiener, should lead. He should be a pariah to any kind of enlightened, civilized society. Instead, he is held up as a model. As a model. And it makes you, frankly, question just exactly where this country's going. From Kate, we hear Dr. Savage, the dentist, and his ilk are highly paid clowns and puppets for the corporations who have poisoned our water, our air, our food, and soil, not to mention forcing fluoride into the water and toxins into the vaccines that parents think they should give their infants. He is a sick, sad little boy in a big boy suit with a hot mic. He is racking up some really bad karma. I feel sorry for him when it comes back on him. Ginsburg in a hot tub? Yeehaw! Boggles the mind. Poetry in the warm bubbles seems to have ruined Michael's perspective. Karma's tough. Karma is unforgiving. Karma is balanced. Bad goes in, bad comes out. Good goes in, good comes out. The problem, though, is I guess, what with the types of karma? This is where I get confused. Because the balance sheet gets worked out in between lives, and you're Michael the Savage Wiener, so by definition, the next life you come back as a dung beetle. If a dung beetle can actually be said to be a worse condition than being the Savage Wiener. Actually, some of that philosophy says that the worst thing you could come back with, it's worse to go what we deem to be better. That you can be so screwed up that you wind up being a god. And, I don't have the tools to go through that kind of cosmogony or theology. So, yeah, feel sorry for him when it comes back on him. But I'd like it a lot better if it was a... instead of traditional karma, I would like for it to be Warner Brothers karma. Anvils. Pianos. 40 stories. Well, I'm feeling mighty low. That kind of karma. But Kate nailed it. Yeah, more than anything else, he is a corporate shill and a corporate flack. I got an email here from one of our listeners, a regular listener and a significant contributor to the network. And he says, this may sound strange, but I would really appreciate it. And he's also a scientist. This may sound strange, but I would really appreciate it if you could pass the word to everyone on the network to pray or petition their friendly spirits his noodly goodness or whatever, that my message to a Bush cabinet member reaches interested ears and an open mind. I know this is almost oxymoronic, so let me explain. As I mentioned long ago, I was inspired by one of your shows on mountaintop removal to work primarily on my alternative energy project. Recently, through what might sound like amazing coincidence, or divine intervention, I gained the chance to get a message to Treasury Secretary and former Goldman Sachs CEO Henry Paulson about myself and my project, since I didn't put a lot of information in my message. It could be dismissed, but I'm praying he'll ask for more information. The sequence of events is quite a story. Back in May, I went to the Eagle Court for the son of my best friend from childhood, a guy I was supposed to get my Eagle with. He got his, then I got mine a couple months later. We were the third and fourth Eagle Scouts ever in our troop. His son received Legacy of Honor as a gift for making Eagle. It's a composite of about 100 stories of Eagle Scouts and their effect on society. The number of liberals is quite surprising. Michael Dukakis, for instance, is an Eagle Scout. Anyway, Secretary Paulson is an Eagle Scout and was profiled. His profile mentioned not only his time at Goldman, but his time as president of the Nature Conservancy. It also mentioned his interest in preserving the Chinese environment. About the same time, I happened to be looking at a publication from the Conservancy and wrote a response to a Luddite letter to the editor. Through a series of emails, I got the opportunity to send an email to Secretary Paulson, and I think my letter will be published. The reason this could be helpful to the anti-mountaintop removal forces in the long run, I'm trying to put the coal industry out of business. Wow. Just wow. So, yeah, if you pray or if you hoist a frosty mug in honor of his noodly goodness or whatever you do, send some good stuff toward our buddy Tosh, please. Because we need this kind of grassroots thinking. We need this kind of on-the-ground thinking. Let's try the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, brother, good afternoon.
Hey, what's going on?
You know how it is. I think you need to get a couple of bottles of starter fluid to chase down that tequila if you ever think you're going to try to understand Savage.
Wait a minute. I thought tequila was starter fluid.
Well, it's cactus starter. No. You need some ether. That's what you need. That's exactly what you need.
Yes, there's nothing worse than Bob Kincaid in the depths of an ether binge.
You know, and we knew we'd get into that rotten stuff pretty soon.
Oh, you know from whence I quote.
That's right. Amen. You know, no, seriously, I can't believe anybody. You know, when he says crap like that, I know the kinds of poems he wrote to Mr. Ginsburg. I can't but help but think that he is the real Stephen Colbert. He has to be some sort of liberal mastermind to make the right wing look so hideously, I mean, undisputably, ridiculously stupid that they could even, I mean, God, what the hell is wrong with people? This person's got to, wait, these, you know, this is the thing. And I understand, and to this respect, Bob, right? And I know, you know, a lot of the guys that may agree, yeah, dude, yeah, you know, all these guys. I know that these kind of people are just sick and tired of political correctness. And I don't blame them. Political correctness is a form of thought control. You know what I'm saying? It's like the double speak.
Yeah, but wait a minute, Albert.
When
the right wing talks about political correctness, that means they want to use the N-word freely.
True.
And they want John McCain not to have to be ashamed to call his wife the C-word.
Well, certainly.
That's their definition of political correctness.
But that's why I can't believe what Savage says. I mean, he's just making them dig their own hole. I mean, come on. I mean, is that how he got out of being gay? Because he slapped himself when he looked him in the mirror and said, "You're not gay! No, not you! You're a man! Be a man! Stand up!" Is that what he did? I mean, he would have to have that degree of disassociation Because I think it's without question he had a homosexual relationship. So he's either that, where he slaps himself and looks him in the mirror, you know what I'm saying? You know, you're not a fish, you're a man. You know, you're either that, or he is the most brilliant mind messer there has ever been. He makes Edward Bernays look like, just look like a piker. It's either that or that. There's no way anybody can say something that ridiculously absurd without some sort of intentional point, without being a complete and utter madman. And I'm willing to give him both. I'm just saying that there is also that possibility, him, Man Coulter, you know, all these people, you know, there is that possibility.
Well, they all have a certain sexual component to them.
So,
whether it's Laura Ingraham on Fox News and that audio that has come to light where she says, "Don't come in my ear."
Hmm.
Or whether it's, they always use some sort of sexual, there's always a sexual overtone, a sexual element to their anger, to their bad vibe, whatever you want to call it. Whether it's O'Reilly screaming, "F it! We'll do it live! We'll do it live!" Or whether it is Flemball, who every time he finds a way to talk about a woman having a female-to-male sex reassignment surgery, refers to it as an addictomy. There is an element of sick sexual repression to every last member of the right wing. It's there when Neil Bortz refers to gay women as vegetarians.
Mm. Or when what's his name from Idaho? Mr. Bathroom Stalker.
Oh yeah, there. They won't have us by the. They can't yank us by the. What is it? By the nozzle. Then
jerk. I think his. Yeah, I think it was jerk. That was his verb.
Yeah, they can't jerk us around by the nozzle. Then. Yeah, we talked about that last one on the section a little bit last night. The horn section with Peter and John and I did, and you know it's it. I played the audio of it, Albert. But the beauty of it's in the video.
I know. He even does the whole hand thing.
But no, there's a little guy sitting behind him.
Yeah, I was looking at him too.
He's got the goldish necktie on, and he's sitting there stock still like a mouse being watched by a rat snake. And just as Larry Craig says, they won't jerk us around by the nozzle. This guy who isn't moving, who, you know, rather Captain Christopher Pike-like, can only move his eyes, does this desperate look away thing with his eyes where, I mean, you know that that's a cry for help.
Uh-huh. I think, you know, it's really kind of sick, and that's maybe one of the best things about the Bush administration period and this whole time period. I have never seen so many people in crowds make so many gaffes in my entire life. Just body language gaffes. I mean, you know, I'm waiting for O'Reilly to call me on that because I think I'm pretty good at reading body language. And I'll tell you what, you know you've seen it. I don't know how many times, even if it's subliminal. That's why I think maybe we know if they got somebody in the background. It's
oh, the guy in the background had a ganja bar to his neck. I mean, there's no doubt about it because he could not move.
Sorry, that was great.
Oh, that's so inside. But it's funny to the people who've read Dune.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's just awesome.
Help me. I can see my entire future passing before my eyes. Someone turn the camera off Senator Craig. Help me.
Ooh, boy. Oh. Yeah. Oh, he's a piece, ain't he? He's just a piece.
I love the background people, Albert, because when the Savage Wiener does this stuff like declaring that autism is a fraud and a racket, is there no Herb Tarlick anywhere in the building who just puts his head in his hands, you know, staring down at his checkered polyester pants and you're killing me. I'll never get the orange juice account now.
Man, you know, but that's what makes me sometimes wish for some sort of divine intervention, like in Clash of the Titans. Like Lady Justice's head just falls off and just starts spewing a bunch of, you know.
I'd settle for lightning bolts.
I'm something. It's got it. We need some lightning bolts. We need.
Oh, we're sorry. Michael Savage has been incinerated by a lightning bolt from the hand of God for all the filth that he's spewed over these years.
Amen. It would be something.
We'll put on a rerun of Michael Savage.
But the thing is, that's I guess, the God of reality is the God of reality, no matter what you call it, spaghetti monster or what, but that's why it's so twisted, and that's why we see Larry Craig getting caught and all these other, you know, these empty vessels. We see all these guys getting caught. Why? Because, man, that's just how justice really winds up working. You know, that's justice right there. And certainly there are a lot of injustices. I can't ever discount that. But, I mean, Ted Haggard, Jeff Gannon, and visiting the White House at late hours. I mean,
But Albert, that's the problem. There are never any consequences. Now, granted, the Reverend Aldridge, you know, Jerry Falwell's dear friend and youth minister, he got his ultimate consequence because, you know, he suffocated in the rubber suit. But where's the consequence for Larry Craig? Where's the consequence for David Vitter?
I hear you, especially Larry Craig, though. I mean, because Larry Craig is a penultimate hypocrite. I mean, and it always is that way, isn't it? I mean, isn't that like, let's read between the lines here. Isn't that the way it always is? It's always the people that are whining about the terrorism that have the most to gain by the terrorism. Isn't it always the people that whine about the gays really in the bathhouses? That's why they can talk about it. You know, I mean, you know, I can't say if the savage wiener sits there and, you know, places protection on it, but wouldn't it just be a beautiful irony akin to the Kids in the Hall skit with the surfer cop that winds up dying of AIDS? You know what I'm saying? Oh, but he's not gay. I mean, come on now. That's what's going to wind up happening. You know, I mean, unless they, Michael Savage Wiener, I'm sure, can afford the Magic Johnson cure, but, I mean, come on now. I mean, you know, look at Haggard. Haggard is like, God, he's like the altar boy of hypocrisy. And I believe it came.
Yeah, but he's been cured of today.
Yeah, okay, until we catch him again. You know, he'll be down and out in the streets, you know,
that just means he backslid into today, but he's still not really gay.
Man, he's gonna be on Bum Fights 10 pretty soon, you watch. He's going to be on one of those fighting over some crack or something because it's that self-repression, man. Like, you know, you may have things you don't like about you, and that's everybody, but you got to accept it. You know, you can accept it. You don't have to act on it. That's fine. If you don't feel like acting on it because it makes you too icky, but whatever. But, you know, accept it. Don't sit there and fight it and then ruin everybody else's high. Don't be sitting there ruining everybody else's ride through life because, God, you will be exposed as the hypocrite you are. I can't imagine anybody, you know, and this is the thing I really hate about Michael Savage the most, is he makes people that have accents similar to mine sound like the most ignorant, wretched fools in the, you know, in the book.
How the hell do you think I feel every time Senator Jeff Sessions opens his mouth, or Sonny Perdue, governor of Georgia, or Jesse Helms, or, you know,
See, but that's allowing me, just like that little what's-her-face, the little tart on The View, you know.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck? Isn't she cute?
She can't relate to racism, you know, even though she tries. But in a sense, you know, what we're kind of talking about is just, you know, reinforcing negative stereotypes, and that's what racism is, you know, anyhow. You know, so in a way, you know, I certainly can feel that pain. Maybe that's why that's why Michael Savage is here, to let me feel that crap, because it's just disgusting. It's disgusting. Not every Italian or any human being, you know, not everybody that's from a certain area, you know, Indian guys can talk like I do, or like Michael Savage does. It depends on who you grew up around. And people like, not everybody in Brooklyn is like him, you know, but there are people like that, and, you know, I don't understand.
But see, he didn't, no, that's not the Brooklyn talking. And I mean, and I don't think that's what you're saying. He got this way. This is the, just like Flush Flembol. This is a shtick. Okay?
Yeah, amen.
Because, you know, you know his background. You know the Ginsburg stuff.
Yup.
You've read, you've seen the postcard that's in the library at, in the Ginsburg collection at Stanford. He was.
Yeah.
He was liberate. And, you know, I've read some stuff that says that he had some sort of a turning point when he felt like he was discriminated against at Berkeley or something. But I don't buy that nearly as much as I do the fact that he was probably jilted.
Mm.
And yeah. Is taking it out on the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because that's what I said. He's either totally deranged psychotic, which I'm certainly willing to, you know, give him the sticker for that, or he's just a brilliant satirist that, you know, maybe didn't get jailed, maybe, you know, but I don't know. Maybe just hides it so he can do his dirty work. I don't know. I'm just saying. I just, you know, sometimes it's tough to trust where these people come from when they say such ridiculous crap like autism is an act or, I mean, God, I should go down to, you know, a nursing home if they're slapping Alzheimer's patients. Like, come on, get your ass off the seat. What is wrong with you? Wipe your own ass. Come on. What are you? I mean, come on. I mean, that's basically what he's saying. I mean, we're talking about people that think a different way. I mean, Down syndrome? Yeah, Down syndrome. It's just an act. They're like all looking the same, and they like, you know, loving and hugging everybody, and they, you know, they really want them Special Olympic medals. What kind of insensitive crap could he come out with next? You know, people born with, a twin that was conjoined or some sort of demon, because that's the kind of ridiculous mindset they would take to buy a line of crap like that. You know, if you don't got tomatoes to grow, nobody buys crap in that volume. I'm telling you. You just can't. Maybe that's just me, and I'm looking at an alien world or something.
No, bless your heart for your optimism, Albert, but no, I'm not, you know, it's people listening to this freak in traffic. And they're sitting there and they're pissed off in the first place. Because see, he is technically from a media or a radio standpoint, he is afternoon drive in the Pacific time zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's on when he's on. So you're stuck in traffic on some godforsaken interstate in California. The traffic's moving about 2.5 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
The steam's already coming out from under your collar because I'd say in excess of 90% of this guy's listeners are men. And what he does, and it's pure psychology, what he does is he offers a means of transference. You're sitting there boiling because you've got stuff that you got to do. You got to get home. You're 2 hours in traffic to work. You're 2 hours in traffic home from work. That means that by the time you get home, you got to shovel dinner into your face. There's no time to really sit back and be a human being. And it's got to be somebody's fault.
But may I interject?
And he plays into that. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say Howard Stern knows that the people that listen to him, that hate him the most, listen twice as long as the people that like him.
Yeah.
And what I just got to say, and this is in defense of all those trapped suckers in California, you know, in the rat. I mean, you want to talk about a rat race? It does feel that. I understand. It feels like a rat race when you live in a city. I certainly understand that. It's a little bit different out here because, you know, I live in the country now, but, you know, it is a rat race when you're out there stuck in six lanes wide, you know? And I'm sure he does have listeners. That's why Talkers Magazine gives him number 3 and this and that. But, you know, when you really look down at the numbers, come on, brother, when you really look down at the number of all these conservative number one book sales, who is doing it? It's foundations that buy them up because they printed them, right? I mean, you know, it's all, I mean, you go, theyrule.net, everybody, listen. Theyrule.net. You want to sit there and see CEOs and how they're all sitting on the same boards eventually when you sit there. It's an amazing website. Theyrule.net. Sorry to do that. But that's an important visual aspect. If you want to sit there and look who's on board of Coca-Cola and this and that, it's the same people that are on the board of the print these conservative rag books. And then the radio stations own this and they own the foundation and la 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 and they buy the books up. Okay? Just to make it look like the illusion. The illusion of support. However, take it like this. You ever think the reason that Bob Kincaid and his common sense isn't on? Because the people that put Mike Savage on and buy his books in bulk don't want you on. Because there isn't, they'll say there is no market for you. Okay, why? Because most of the people may most likely agree with you. Now, it's the people like Mike Savage that can try to say that retardation, you know, mental retardation is an act for what? I still, that just freaking floors me that he can imagine.
To get more welfare money.
Oh, Jesus Christ almighty.
Well, I mean, did you not hear that? I mean, because he starts out analogizing it to asthma.
Yeah, that's an act, too.
Oh, yeah. Back up. I mean, let's review for just a minute, okay? I mean, this is real easy. Here we go.
Now you want me to tell you my opinion on autism, since I'm not talking about autism? A fraud. A racket. For a long while, we were hearing that every minority child had asthma. Why did they suddenly? Why was there an asthma epidemic amongst minority children? Because I'll tell you why. The children got extra welfare if they were disabled, and they got extra help in school. It was a money racket. Everyone went in and was told, when the nurse looks at you, you go,
and see, that's so easy, Albert, because, you know, one, he's apparently against extra help for minority children in school. He's against extra help in school. He's against education in school. Where does he want the education to take place, Albert? And it's easy on another level, too. Maybe the minority kids were coming down with the asthma because the minority kids were living in places that were next to toxic cesspools from the negligent, grossly negligent, willful, wanton, reckless American industrialists who didn't give a damn what they put into the groundwater or the ground itself or the air, because they always put those things next to where the poor folks live. They never put them in Scarsdale.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me, and I'm nuts, right? I mean, because there can't be any. But see, that's the underpinning to all of this. I mean, the attack on autistic kids, the attack on asthmatic kids, the attack on sick poor people has an underpinning, and the underpinning of that is that they're a bunch of frauds and fakes because the corporate murderers who keep me neck deep in, you know, little boy hookers or whatever it is that the Savage Wiener does. My corporate base just wants me to make sure that I keep America dumbed down and looking the other way and finding somebody to hate instead of paying attention to the people who are actually actively screwing them.
Well, yep, I think that's his prime directive right there. And, you know, that just pretty much, yeah, glorifully paints exactly what I was saying, because, you know, and I know that. I mean, my brother right now, he's working roofing, and my brother's my brother. You know, he might be doing roofing, and that don't make anything, but it is a blue-collar thing. And, you know, half the time I tell him, I'm like, listen, because he is my brother, and you know how I talk. I'm like, Michael, when they start saying they're garbage, you know, if you want to keep your job, shut your mouth. Because in a way, there are some people out there, certainly, that are the people, the devout believers, you know, of the Savage Wiener, you know, that sit there and, you know, do. There are, and I can't deny it, Bush still has a 20-something% approval rating.
Sure.
I mean, so they're there. I mean, you know, but the, you know, and to deny their existence would certainly be to deny autism, okay, because it's almost probably the same percentage. But, and I'm not trying to say that people with autism, I know a lot of people with autism, and they wouldn't, a lot of them have more sense than that. Just say that, even if they're too worried about memorizing this.
Oh, Lord, I did roofing a couple of summers way, way, way back when. And, you know, I'm a big chicken. And I was scared to death. I was gonna go, you know, falling off the roof. I did, because, you know, we had to climb the ladder with a bundle on each shoulder, a bundle of shingles. Yep. So that's no hands on the ladder. And I tipped over backwards with the ladder one day, and that was the day. It was toward the end of the season. That was the day I just said, you know, pay me what you owe me. Won't be back. I'm not gonna die for minimum wage.
Yep. Amen. But you know what? Nah, the educational system is working, because there are people out there that will do that. You know, my problem with school, I was saying, you know this. I didn't like school. You know, because it was boring. It wasn't teaching me anything. You know, was like things I already knew, you know, so I just had a negative, you know, relationship with school. And I don't want my children to have that negative aspect of school. Even though I know the fire of learning has been burning in my heart and it never will stop, I don't want them to ever, I don't even want theirs to ever get some water sprayed on it. I want them to just blossom and bloom because, man, I don't know what I could have been if I actually really was challenged and loved it. You know, I mean, that's the same thing with my brother. My brother, man, he don't even have that, but that's why he stuck doing roofing jobs, you know, 28 years old, and that's why he stuck doing this kind of stuff, and he's, you know, smarter than that, but at the same time, he's got to be around people who aren't.
Well, how many times did our buddy Vince call in from South Georgia with another Fundy update on the followers of Christ that he worked with, who, you know, were, you know, insane. You know, Obama, he's a Muslim. And there's poor Vince going, and just finally having it. I remember the night he called and he said, it all just bubbled over and you're crazy.
Yeah. I know, because that's how it, that, you know, and there are people that like that, and, you know, they are usually loud. They usually, if you try to have a different opinion than them, they'll curse at you and scream at you, and they'll call you all kinds of names, and they use words incorrectly, like they use the word liberal like it was a rapist. And, you know, these kinds of people that can actually, you know, they don't understand what the word really means, so they can use this double talk. They can use this double speak, this new speak, and that's exactly what that is. You know, but at the same time, just because somebody is in that aspect, just like my brother, and this is what I'm saying in terms of Michael Savage and the people that are stuck right at home with him, sure, there are probably two or three guys that are really loud and they talk about, yeah, this man knows what he's talking about. There's probably a young, dumb idiot in there that might think he knows what he's talking about and agree with it. But then there's my brother sitting there, and there's another old man sitting there, and they're just like, mm-hmm, right. They realize where they are, they accept their lot in life in that respect, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that they're completely brainwashed morons. You know, Bush, remember, that is a nice thing. For all the Republican hype, for all how great Fox News is and how high Michael Savage ratings is, okay, he's still got a 20% approval rating, okay?
Bush is less than a cipher now, Albert, because he ain't coming back. The game now is to get John McCain in so that Bush won't go to prison and Cheney won't go to prison and that nobody's going to answer for nothing at The Hague, because you've actually got legitimate organizations out there saying that, you know, they've committed war crimes. But, you know, you talk about the they use the word liberal like, you know, as the equivalent of the word rapist. Sure, you know, I've had it sitting here with me for a while now. The American Family Association Action Alert: liberals block effort to help solve the energy crisis. President lifts ban, but Reid and Pelosi fight offshore drilling. Now this is the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. And they claim a million-person mailing list. And they are a tax exempt. Your gifts to the AFA are tax deductible, okay? Now just listen to this for a minute. Just listen to this. I'm sorry, I don't mean to read at you, but I don't have Donald Wildman here to say it for himself. Dear Bob, tired of paying $4 a gallon for gas? Tired of having liberals in Congress block every move to make us energy sufficient? Not energy efficient, but energy sufficient. Then it is time to make your voice heard. President Bush has lifted a executive order banning the drilling for off our coasts. This is something which should have been done 10 years ago. But liberal politicians blocked attempts to do so. Because they succeeded, we are now paying $4 a gallon of gas. That's his grammar, not mine. We're paying $4 a gallon of gas. Drilling in proven oil reserves will not immediately provide more oil. Officials say it'll take about 10 years to get the new oil to market. But here is a fact. 10 years from now, we will still have a oil shortage if we again fail to begin solving the problem. Congress still has a ban on offshore drilling. Congress must lift that ban before drilling can begin. Which leaders in Congress are leading the efforts to keep the ban? Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, Democrats, both of them. They want to keep us at the mercy of foreign oil for another 10 years. They are more concerned with playing politics than you're paying $4 a gallon for gas. It is time that our leaders put our families first. Tell them so.
Oh, you're hurting my guts, Bob. You're really hurting them bad. You really are.
These things roll in. But
hang on.
How many different ways? They want to be energy sufficient. If we're relying on oil, we are never going to be energy sufficient. If we are relying on coal, we are never going to be energy sufficient. The only things that this planet has to offer, like I'm telling you something you don't know, the only energy supplies that we have that are infinite within relative terms are wind and solar and the heat that comes from under the ground.
And biomass. So,
to the extent that the surface of the Earth continues to be able to grow stuff.
Amen. But
can't grow no switchgrass on no mountaintop removal sites though. I garon double damn tell you that because they may say they want to, but you can sow all the switchgrass seed on Kayford Mountain's so-called reclaimed areas you want to. But I tell you what, if you had a plow with 10-foot wide diamond plows on it, you couldn't get through that rock because the rock just comes up right through the surface. And the high walls, you know, how are you gonna harvest the switchgrass on the high walls?
Hemp, not switchgrass. Never talk about switchgrass in my presence, sir.
Now, I understand that. You can't grow no hemp on no MTR site neither. I mean, I realize it'll grow just about anywhere short of the desert and some of that.
It does have the strongest root system out of any plant, if you ever really look at it. The root system on those are pretty incredible. But I don't want to get off on that too much of a tangent, but you just remember this. You are one of those million people. And so are the people that are consciously aware of this. I mean, honestly, Bob, that argument doesn't fly. This argument's not flying anymore. I don't know if you can see it, but they're trying to, you know, they keep trying to puff it up. But everywhere they get that it gets puffed up, the people are out there knocking it down. I mean, I just saw a nice little interview on Crooks and Liars with Naomi Klein. I mean, she handed those Fox fakies their ass.
Is this yours? Yeah.
she punted it to them. It was ridiculous. Okay, and you know what? I'm telling you, people ain't going to be buying that crap. They ain't buying it. They know. Listen, if they were buying it, with the prices the way they are, the way the economy is, the way people are sitting there got to scrunch and scrap and save, if people were buying it, they would be a freaking groundswell. But people don't want that. What they want is solar. They want it to be renewable. They're sick and tired of paying for electricity. And you think there's a single person that makes eye contact with me and talks to me for more than 5 minutes without solar coming into it. Okay, and I have never, ever, 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 ever once had somebody say, that's a stupid idea, boy. And I live in, you know, I know, but I live in a good place, but there are, you know, dummies here. But I've never had one. Everybody. Anybody. Blue collar, white collar, I don't care where you are. There ain't nobody that's going to try to say, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Robert Watt, solar panels. Everybody realizes they're going to save so much money a month. You know, if the reason it's not there is because the price is so high. And the price is so high because people can't afford them. Because so they're not making them. But I'll tell you what, California is doing a government initiative, and that's what's going to wind up happening. I think people see that. I think consciousness knows that. And the same reason that you're getting these emails, and probably more than half of the people that they have on their million list of people just want to be members, and they just want to know just because they want to hear, and they want to be able to see what these people are saying.
But this is a religious organization, ostensibly, Albert. So,
yes.
You know, what goes unsaid under this is, Jesus wants to drill offshore.
And even...
No, no, please, please. I mean, I know you think that's crazy. I know you think that's just patently nuts.
I have evangelical Christians, okay, as in-laws. Yeah, now you, yeah, okay. So, I mean, I know how that is. But even when I talk to them, if you lay it out in the right way without saying any of their little trigger words, right, even they realize, man, we don't want no coal ash dump in this area. We don't want that. Well, if we don't want that, then we're going to need a different alternative. And I'll say, oh, man, you know, I'm really thinking about getting solar panels on my roof. And I tell them the whole little system I want to do. And they all, And these are evangelical Christians. And, you know, I don't think anybody except the most, you know, the strychnine drinkers can sit there and try to pretend like, you know, if God gives us the keys to his car, we're going to return it as a wheel and a chain with the key attached to it. You know what I'm saying? That ain't cool. I mean, come on now. You wouldn't do that to somebody. And, you know, there are people I'd loan my car to. And I would damn if not expect a single scratch on it. Why? Because I'm being generous and kind and giving you my car. Take care of it. Bring it back. If you use, you know, I mean, I give people rides all the time, but I'm driving, so I don't even ask for gas. But I'll tell you what, if you're driving it and you use gas, well, fill it back up.
Yeah.
You use 5.3 gallons, put 5.3 back. You can put 5.1, I'll be cool with that. And that's why, you know, that's what I kind of look at the world. You know, certainly there are things that, you know, if you're going to sit there and talk about the Creator, I ain't going to deny that or whatever. There are things that need to be used. I just watched an interesting documentary called Blood Colban. I think it's Colban. And it's about this metal, and that really the biggest mine for it and the biggest source for it is in the Congo. You see, without this mineral, it's one of the most dense minerals. And without this mineral, your little cell phones and all this other stuff wouldn't work. The problem is the Congo, as you know, all what happened in Rwanda with the Tutsis and the Hutus, I think it was the Tutsis that did the massacre. I'm confused. I'm sorry if I'm wrong. Don't call me John McCain. I'm afraid, you know, whatever one it was, the one that did the massacre got exiled out of the country, and they went to the Congo. And so now we have this, I mean, it really, what's going on over there makes what goes on in diamond-producing areas look like patty cake and cupcakes, you know what I'm saying? And this is all about cell phones. I mean, we're sitting there talking about people getting shot, getting raped, getting killed, all this kinds of crap, right, over cell phones. People have no idea it's even that. And there's another documentary I just watched, Black Gold, about the coffee and how, you know, all of our little coffee markets hinder the third world. I mean, we're going to sit there and talk about, you know, aid and all this other stuff. Now, I get that. That kind of stuff. We need to have these people have trade. But this stuff has to be economically and fair trade. You can't sit there and pay people for these minerals that, you know, we go to these phones and these companies, transnational companies like Verizon and AT&T and Apple and all these other country, you know, companies that make these products. You can't sit there and, you know, they make these billions of dollars. Why? Because they're raping people. They're paying them $10 for, you know, a gram of this stuff and, or, you know, a tin of it, you know, a kilogram of it. You know, they're paying them $10 or 2 pounds of it. And meanwhile, their country's getting raped and, you know, all it's doing is funding militias, and there's Belgian companies that import the stuff, and it's funding the militias there. So this is what I'm saying in terms of even the solar panels and cell phones and all our technology that, you know, we certainly love and need, and it's really excellent because it helps stay consciously aware. You know, but we got to also realize the implications of what this is doing to the Congo, what our energy needs are doing to, you know, and this is why I have a little bit of faith. You know, in West Virginia, you got your problems there, and people are realizing that this is not the answer. You know, I know they went ahead with it, but that doesn't mean the resistance is going to go away or they're trying to go ahead with it. You know, I'm telling you, watch. It's going to be, and as time has been going on.
Oh, look, the freaks are on the run. They are. They're scared. We are winning this fight. There's no doubt about it. But there's structural stuff underneath the other side, Albert, that we still have to be concerned about. For instance, just to turn backward to the American Family Association for a minute. This is a 501c3 organization, and for the most part, it's impossible to get a look at their books. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, here they are. To be fair, this is the American, there is not a word, okay, there is not a word in this action alert about religion,
mm-hmm.
There's not a word in it about salvation. Mm-hmm. There's not a word in it about Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
It's a religious organization, and yet here they are doing open political shilling.
Mm-hmm.
But they are the religion industry, Albert. So I think that we're a little bit self-deluding if at some point we don't say, why are they doing this? Now, here's a 501c3 organization that is not supposed to mention or not supposed to campaign for or endorse or condemn any political candidates. By name, they expressly condemn Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. Now, all of that taken together should get their 501c3 tax-exempt status pulled.
Hopefully it will.
Well, there's nobody out there complaining that I know of, but
it'll happen.
But the other thing is, remember, I said it's almost impossible to get a look at their books. Hence the problems that Senator Grassley has had trying to get the prosperity gospel evangelicals to come in and take an oath, you know, to tell the truth before the God that they say they believe in but don't really. It's hard to get. I guarantee you, if you had a really, really sneaky investigator who could get in and grab the data on a zip drive a flash drive or you know something like that, and get it to a forensic accountant,
mm-hmm.
you would find out that there is money flowing into the American Family Association from places like the American Enterprise Institute, maybe the Heritage Foundation, maybe the Competitive Enterprise Institute, you know, right-wing think tanks, oil companies, pharmaceutical companies, the usual suspects.
Yep.
Because they know how to do this work. And while I think you're right to a certain extent on what's happening at the grassroots level, I don't want to do it just like these people are doing it because they're sleazy, they're filthy.
Yeah.
But we have not even tried to figure out the thing. Remember, Al Capone didn't get taken down for murder or bootlegging or rum running or any of that stuff.
Yep.
What did Al Capone go down for?
Tax evasion.
Bingo.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with Nixon. Nixon didn't go down, you know, for war crimes or any of that kind of nonsense, but he went down for, you know, breaking and entering.
And so it's that kind of mundane stuff. I would love nothing more than to see the Reverend Donald Wildman, his ancient aging ass, making little tiny rocks out of great big rocks with a sledgehammer. I'd love that. And his son. And all the filthy little acolytes of corporate America that use religion to front a corporate agenda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take action. Email your two senators and representative. Tell them to lift the ban on offshore drilling. Please help us get this information into the hands of as many people as possible by forwarding it to your entire email list of family and friends. Thank you for caring enough to get involved. If you feel our efforts are worthy of support, would you consider making a small tax-deductible contribution to help us continue? That's at the top of the email, Albert, not the bottom.
Oh, that's slick stuff right there. Before they give you the meat, they hold out their hand and say, pay. And that's fine. Because I'll tell you what, that's what all this is, and this whole conversation in that respect just echoes my klaxon call for transparency in government. And transparency, period. I mean, if we have transparency, we're not going to have the problems that we're going to be having because we'll see and we'll know. And the media will actually be able to grow some bones in their legs and stand up and hopefully grow a spine and stand erect. You know, because if we don't have transparency, we don't got nothing. If we don't know what's going on, I mean, God, you know, it's the same thing. You bring up the whole thing of what brings them down. You know, well, what brought the Nazis down in Nuremberg? It wasn't that they had concentration camps. It was they were wars against peace. And, I mean, I believe that, and I look at that, and I see that, and I hold that as kind of some sort of hope that, you know, historical precedent will take place And people will, I think that is. I think, people, they might use liberal like a bad word, but even they don't want to see the country torture people. They honestly, when it gets down to their heart of hearts, they don't want to think of this, and that's why we have the right-wingers that we do. They don't want to think of this country in any negative light, and nobody does. But right now, the light is so glaringly obvious that, hopefully it's going to sit there and make us stand up and, open the shades and realize it's time to get out of bed. And that's, and that's the only thing, the way that I can sit there and hope for. I hope we don't go back to sleep too soon, but at the same time, we got to get out, make some coffee, make pancakes for the kids, and do what we got to do, because transparency is part of that. If we don't have transparency, we're going to be stuck with this crap. We really are. You can't sit there and buy foundation books that you're only going to give away for two for 1 cent. Hardcover, hard copies. You can't sit there and do that continually without finally being exposed. And I think deep down in the heart of hearts, I think a lot of people realize that. I really do. And I think a lot of the people that listen to these clowns and these thugs, I think a lot of them only listen to it just so they know. My grandpa would have been, would have been spinning. He's probably spinning right now. He's going to create a black hole in Florida where he's going. Because it's just, come on now. We're at this point now where I think it's been so polluted and so absolutely ridiculously just manipulated that, people feel, wait a minute. This is plastic. This isn't real. This is baloney. This is not what it's about, and I'm sick of it. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Well.
And granted, I think. Initiatives to rebuild our infrastructure and everything else like that to actually meet the next century. Even look at time. We're still at the beginning of the brand new century. We're only, 7 years, 8 years into it, so it's going to revolve. It is. I believe in that. It just, the human desire for progress and that is just not going to be overwhelmed. That's, I call that part of consciousness. And, these people, I understand where they're at, but I'll tell you what, even their followers are checking over their shoulders and being like, what are these people talking about? I'm sure you could. There is 27% of the supporters, but you really couldn't find. I'll tell you, you say the word, I'll do it. I'll go stand on the corner and talk to every person I'm walking down the street, and I'll just ask them, you think it's a good idea to continue on, the path of fossil fuels? Just a real simple, straight-up, dry question like that. And I guarantee you that I don't think I'd get 1 in 100.
Yeah.
Maybe 1 in 100.
But they're still out there. We've seen evidence of it recently here. It's not worth mentioning because I don't want the proud little trolls to feel like they were getting the publicity, and they've been dealt with since. But they're still there. And the Fockers, the friends of coal, they know they're on the run, and they are desperate. They're desperate to hold. They're doing the King Canute thing and trying to hold back the tides.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like one of my friends who was involved in the American Indian movement said, we've already won. It's just a matter of them realizing their beat. So I ascribe to that, but I also maintain a healthy dose of reality, Albert, insofar as I know that the enemy is not going to quit the field. What Rick said a little bit ago about kicking and stomping once they're on the ground is very much true. Just because we get them a little bit submissive, that's when you go in with the... Oh boy, I don't mean to use the violent imagery,
right.
Kill shot, okay? That is when you do
it. But they're going to do it. They're going to do it. You watch. They're going to do it. They're going to strike Iran, and they are done. They will be in checkmate. Because of what they're fighting is, it's barely tangible. And what's going to wind up happening. You know, yeah. The guys that wrote the Moran signs and peace, those guys are going to be out there probably, but there'll be two of them. And there will be such an uprising against anything like that that you watch what happens. I'm telling you, people are sick of it, tired of it. We're getting to that point where we had enough, and every day that goes by, we're that much more sensitive to it. You know, they can have their ratings or whatever, and their inflated book sales, and you know their emailing lists. You know, they're you know, they and the basic reality is they don't even understand what they're doing. They don't understand the hand that they're playing into. They're like, they can't read poker faces, and they don't really understand where we really are going to wind up having to be heading. You know, I mean, this is why people have sex. I mean, what they're fighting is the fundamental laws of nature, and they're doomed. They're done. You know, and I just got to say that because, you know, you are one of the threads of consciousness out to others, and this is seriously, it brings me to tears when I think about it because it's a beautiful thing. You know, I mean, even my neighbor, he's pulling in the driver right now. He works his ass off. He does everything he's doing, and I haven't heard him disagree with me yet. So, I mean, if guys like him are moving, they're done. Honestly, I mean, just to speak of it like that, they're done. So, you know, they can have their little movements. We're going to wind up having transparency because people want to know. How is Freddie and Fannie Mae falling apart like this? They're going to want to know when they sit there, and it's really going to impact them. You know, I don't think a lot of people even realize how much it's going to impact them. I don't think you or myself realize, truly deep down in the cockles of our heart, or even want to acknowledge how it's going to really impact us. You know, because what's coming down the pike, people, what's coming down is not going to be pretty at all. It's just, I can't promise you flowers and, you know, candy canes. It's just not going to happen. But it is going to destroy this yoke that's around our neck right now. At the very end of it, it will happen. You know, we will have victory. I don't know if that's what we really, really even, you know, I don't know if we're ready for that, but we will have it. It's just, it's inevitable. You know, there ain't no way. There ain't no way. We can't continue. We cannot continue down the path that we're on. And everybody in their heart of heart knows that. You know, you can't keep having American people work and work and work and have nothing to show for it. You know, I mean, that's the beauty of what, you know, happened after the World War II of this country, is it, and that is the beauty of our arrogance. You know, as everything has, you know, reality is a triple-edged sword, and that ain't no doubt, because you sit there and you look, we had this giant era of prosperity. Well, just as the Afghanistan, you know, people that live there ain't going to tolerate some, you know, imperialist infidel coming in to rule them, we're not going to tolerate our lifestyle getting to a point where it's not even sustainable. It's not even appreciable. We're going to have to wind up living like Amish. Oh, hell no. People ain't going to put up with that. And that's why the right wing likes to give gas and all this other junk. And that's why that, but you know how shallow and fragile, you know how fragile that argument is. And let them say it. Let them say it, because every word out of their mouth just makes them look stupider and dumber and crueler and more ignorant than they could ever possibly imagine, than we could ever argue for them. There's no way, man, if I would have sat there and called Michael Savage some sort of person that would deny the existence of autism, I would have been laughed at 5 years ago. And now this stupid bastard is doing it to himself. Jesus, we're sitting on a boat in the middle of the ocean and saying, oh, we're on dry land. These people are on PCP, Bob. They're done. I'm telling you, the high is going to wear them off, and they're going to be like, what the hell am I doing in prison? That's what's going to wind up happening to them, and it's going to happen that fast. You know, you do it disassociative like that, that's the sick thing, and that's the scary thing. You know, I read the vaults of Irwin, and I love reading people's experiences on all kinds of different things. And I sat there and I'll read, you know, a dissociative, and nothing scares me more. Nothing scares me more than somebody sitting there waking up saying, what the hell am I doing in jail? Oh, you killed your family. What? No. Yeah, you did. And that's a dissociative. That's what's going to happen to these people.
Wait. It's already happening. Don't say gonna. It already is.
There we go.
And it's already happening in the political realm, Albert. It's already happening in the form of the people who are out there, and because they're still good repig lickings, And they're saying things like, well, I never knowed when I voted for George Bush that he weren't a real conservative. See, it's not he's not a real conservative. We still need a good, godly, conservative president who can solve all America's problems, because that's what conservatism will do.
Fine.
Never realizing that, yeah, they did vote for a real conservative, and they are what you just described. They've literally lost what little tenuous grasp they had on reality.
Mm-hmm.
And they are utterly dissociated from anything resembling the world you and I live in.
Yes. But we're delusional.
Oh, yeah. What was it? 2-3 years ago, the Savage Wiener made a big deal, not to mention a small fortune, out of a stupid little rag tome called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder.
Oh, God, that's a way to filter people, ain't it, if they repeat that? Oh, God.
Liberalism is a mental disorder, but he's the guy who's out on the air screaming that there's no such thing as autism. What's next? Yeah. There's no such thing as malaria? No such thing as TB?
No such thing as AIDS.
Oh, no. There's such a thing as AIDS, but he's such a sick little... I'm hanging on to that word. I hadn't heard it in a while. He's such a sick little dissociative moron that he thinks... He's still parroting Jesse Helms' words. while at the same time, the dissociative Republicans in Congress were trying to make an AIDS HIV research funding bill the Jesse Helms HIV AIDS research funding bill. You know, I want to get finished building the new studio just so I can have room to run around screaming, because I don't have it here. And, you know, I don't know, set up, get John Fox to help me set up microphones so I can just turn them all on and everybody can hear the Doppler effect as I go, you know. When I hear that garbage, it's the same thing as John, you know, what am I calling him now? Oh, yeah. 894. It's the same thing that 894 is doing. Declaring that, my friends, oil rigs very successfully survived the impact of hurricanes. And I'm sitting here looking at the story about it on Think Progress, and there's five photographs of hurricane-stricken oil platforms.
That just
look like they've been stepped on by the world's largest two-year-old.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, though. Come on now. You know it's funny. It's so funny.
But the thing is, we've got to make some progress with the for-profit media, because they've got to show John McCain say it. And you know what? CNN did this the other day, Albert.
Mm.
They showed John Boehner talking about how he was going to Alaska and look for some of that hidden wildlife in the Anwar, because he keeps talking about how there's nothing alive in Anwar.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, there's no wildlife there. He's going to go look for it. So the whole time that he's on there with Wolf Blitzer, God, I love it when Malloy does that, this whole time that he's on there with Wolf, he's sitting there on a split screen on the left-hand side, blathering away about the need to drill in Anwar and how it won't hurt any of the little aminals. And on the right side of the split screen, they're showing all this wildlife wandering around Anwar. And that was a beautiful moment, because it took John Boehner live, real-time, unedited, and with those pictures that are worth 1,000 words, made a liar out of him with every word that came out of his mouth. Now, the same thing, they got to learn to do the same thing with 894.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when he says, yeah, my friend's oil platforms survive hurricanes quite well. With oil, when he says oil, there's a picture of a collapsed oil platform. Platforms, another one collapsed, survive, boom, boom, boom. Three of them stomped to pieces by a hurricane. And the thing is, that's not liberal bias. That's actually, and that's part of the struggle, that's journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because journalism is supposed to be a reflection of reality based upon fact, which is supposed to serve as a great disinfectant.
Mm-hmm. Sunlight.
Yeah.
That's why we need transparency. I mean, but here's something to keep your heart. Here's something to keep your heart nice and warm at night. Remember, they picked George Bush over McCain. Okay, and if his Mr. Hero status and war hero and all that patriotic crap didn't fly when that clown was running up against him, he's, come on.
Yeah, I know. But,
you know, can't.
Yeah, I get it. Hey, Albert, what a wonderful conversation. This has been a blast, brother.
Always, brother, always. All right, we'll chat with you later. Have a good weekend.
You too. Say hi to the girls for me.
I will.
All right, bye. Our pal Albert in Wisconsin. Albert's found himself an optimistic place, and I'm almost jealous. And I didn't mean to keep, you know, countervailing his. There's reason for optimism, but if you want to bolster that optimism, if you want to make that optimism more real, it has to go hand in hand with an unshrinking, unrelenting willingness to stand up and punch, figuratively speaking, the savage wieners of the world in the mouth. Anybody who raises an autistic child has the right, in my book, to go and feed the savage wiener his teeth for what he said. Because those are fighting words. What the savage wiener said are the equivalent of a punch thrown at every parent who has ever tried to attend to the needs of a congenitally sick child. And that's just, you know, what kind of a jerk I am, I guess. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking about me?
Who?
Richard.
Yeah, hey, Richard, what's up?
I'm in the kitchen. This is like, whatever happened to Gunny Bob?
Haven't heard from Bob in a while. Hope he's doing okay.
Yeah, but you know what?
You'd be surprised the number of people I think about. I wonder if I've pissed him off or, you know. But no, haven't heard from Bob in a while. And I really sincerely hope that he and Glenda are doing all right.
Oh yeah, definitely. But what this reminded me of was when Gunny would call up and say, "Tell you what he was eating when he first came on." You know, you put.
Oh
him,
yeah.
He would say, "I'm eating cheese." Or, you know, I'm eating chicken. And, what's our friend who's in, Atlanta? You know, the guy who's on,
Malloy?
Yeah, Malloy once had a fit at him. Because he started out by saying, "I'm eating chicken." Anyway, the reason I'm calling is, I've got something on my mind. You know, we have all these Democrats in name only. Who work against us. And I've got my own, naturally, which is Dianne Feinstein.
And no one works harder against the people, you know.
Yeah, but her whole political career almost has been acted out on a stage. It's been a Republican stage, but it says Democrat on it. And that's where we're all fooled here.
Well, she's married to a war profiteer, isn't she?
Yes. A guy named Blum, but there's this whole strategy, which is that the liberals will vote for me because they've got nobody else. And then in her actual practice, of course, she votes like a Republican. I can think of maybe.
And you know, I got to ask a question out of that statement, Richard. Whose fault is it that she says the Democrats will vote for me because they've got no one else? Whose fault is that?
Well,
as far as I'm concerned, it's the liberals' fault.
Well, you raise a good question because she comes out of what I would call the San Francisco political machine, which is a conservative machine, despite the fact that it has some union participation. And San Francisco, to me, is a city that's both liberal and conservative. and we don't see the conservative part, but it's very strong.
Well, except when the savage wiener comes up and puts it up in our faces and makes us not only see it, but lick it and sniff it.
What which particular thing are you talking about? I don't listen to it.
Well, it's what I started off the program with and have been going on about for about an hour and a half here. This business of saying that autism is a fraud and a fake.
Yeah.
He's a San Francisco liberal.
Does he actually broadcast from here?
Yeah, his home base is San Francisco.
Well, the reason I'm laughing is, there's your example.
I mean, early in the program, I had that email from our buddy Marty, who said Marty is in the Bay Area, and Marty said it says a lot about what San Francisco really isn't, that someone like him actually defiles that place.
But, you know, on the other hand, we have to look at some good in San Francisco, too. It's a place where I lived for 11 years. And I worked for the city.
I'd give anything. No. Don't get me wrong, Richard. I'd give anything to spend some time there. I've never been there. I'd love to go there.
Oh, come to San Francisco, but you have to, once you get over the beauty of the place, you have to realize that it's an Eastern style city, and it's got city problems.
And it's got profound city problems.
Yes, indeed.
It's got the city problems that the rest of American cities have. And the problems that the rest of American cities have are largely problems that have been created by the right wing, by the so-called conservatives who have, said that, it's your money. And, the idiots that say, it's my money, don't realize that when they talk about tax cuts, they're talking about money that was going to make the places that they live decent places to live. Potholes in a road have a direct and proximate result, the direct and proximate connection to our willingness to pay to not have potholes in the road.
Sure. Well, the one thing I want to point out is that in the same election where Nancy Pelosi was reelected, the voters in her district passed a resolution to impeach Bush.
Well, she missed that part.
Yeah, her own constituents, man. So when she said impeachment is off the table, she slapped her own electorate. And, these are her voters. the audacity is even greater than what you might think elsewhere in the country. In that statement that she made. Well, she was running, at one point she was running for re-election, and the Republicans didn't run anybody against her. They, in San Francisco.
Why bother? Why bother?
Why bother? So, there's a radio program on the big public radio station. And you imagine, over 200,000 watts over here. It's the biggest presence on the FM band in terms of power. So this guy does a morning show. He's pretty good. His name is Michael Krasny. And he likes to have everybody who's running for political office on his program.
Michael Krasner?
Krasny.
Krasny, okay. I was thinking of Paul Krasner. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, somebody different. Krasny is a journalism teacher at San Francisco State U. He's good at what he does. And Dianne Feinstein will never show up on his program. But he's had, Congress, he had on Nancy Pelosi's opponent, a gay guy who ran against Pelosi, and he went into the Republicans, and said, "You don't have anybody. I want to run." They said, "Fine, go ahead."
I wonder what is happening with Cindy Sheehan's attempt to get petition her way onto the ballot. Have you followed any of that, Richard?
No, I haven't. Believe it or not, the one paper that I would follow it in is an independent called the San Francisco Bay Guardian. And I can't read the print. They're so PC, they're printing their paper with gray ink in little tiny fonts. You know, and even with my glasses, I can't read it.
Printed with printed with environmentally friendly green invisible ink.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I've given up. I can't. So anyway, I think Cindy Sheehan sort of goes through these bursts of energy. You know, she comes on and then gets tired and withdraws for a while and then comes back and then withdraws. Do you notice that?
Yeah, and I understand it too.
Yeah, sure.
Because so, you can't you can't maintain that. No, 24/7, 365. No, that causes spontaneous combustion.
Yeah. So she,
Well, when I talked to her a month or two ago, she needed something like, I think, 13,000 signatures on her petition to get on the ballot, and she had until, I guess, about maybe 2 weeks from now to get it. So, I haven't heard anything about her her effort lately, and you know, I'd like to see her on the ballot.
Well, she should be able to get that. I mean, San Francisco's got about 700,000 people. So
she's got no infrastructure. She's got no. She's got very few people beating on doors for her. I'd say she's really up against a challenge. Because the other part of it is the district that Nancy Pelosi serves, and you live closer to there than I do,
yeah,
is rather a Tony district.
Well, no, it's multifaceted, as I understand it, as I remember it, because I've been out of San Francisco for 20 years, so you know there's a lot I have forgotten. As I remember her district, it's sort of a broad mix. And I think it includes a little part of Marin County, which is mostly, you know, upscale. That's across the San Francisco Bay Bridge.
Right.
Wrong bridge. The Golden Gate.
Yeah, it's across the Golden Gate. That was my yeah.
Yeah, from San Francisco.
Yeah, the greatest amount of my knowledge of that area comes from reading Jack Kerouac and Gary Snyder. So.
Oh yeah. Well, this guy who was running against Pelosi, it was very funny. I mean, he knew he had no chance of winning, but he kept, you know, calling, would say, "What do you think of Nancy Pelosi?" And he would say, "Pelosi, that bitch!" You know, and that's, he would just repeat that on public radio. That was really funny. But my real topic right now is, let's go back to Feinstein for a moment. What happens... I mean, I've followed her career, and it's been so frustrating because in each election there's a Republican and then there's her. So what I have is a choice between two Republicans. I don't know where else in the country this goes on.
What I think you're describing, Richard, is actually a matter of... what goes on in the congressional districts of this country, at least from a liberal or progressive standpoint, is that what you get in November is a choice between a Republican and someone calling themselves a Democrat who is about as progressive as a locomotive running backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
And which brings me full circle to the question that I asked earlier. Whose fault is that?
Okay, whose fault is it?
It's the liberals and progressives' fault. You know, expecting tigers to change stripes and leopards to change spots is a fool's errand. It's worse than that. It's foolhardy. And we're beginning to learn that a little bit, Richard, because you see some of these so-called blue dog Democrats in this last round of primaries have had their rear ends handed to them, and deservedly
okay,
so.
That's where I'm coming from.
But liberals and progressives cannot expect Democrats who are otherwise conservative to suddenly respond to their needs. The classic example comes from right here where I am. Just a couple of weeks before he slipped a shiv into the back of not just progressive or liberal America, but all of America, Robert Byrd accepted $455,000, Richard, $455,000 from Move On. And a couple of weeks later, he wrote this press release about how he'd received all these letters that had coffee cup stains and donut sugar on them from people asking him to please get behind Samuel Alito because Samuel Alito's a godly man who'll stand up for our First Amendment rights.
Oh, boy.
You know, and I wrote, after he did it, I wrote to Byrd's office and I said, you know, if there's any decency left in the man, the least he could do is give the $455,000 back to all the liberals and progressives who dug deep so that he could be reelected.
Well, why did they give him the money in the first place?
All because they were afraid that a woman named Shelley Moore Capito, was going to run against him for Senate, and they were afraid that she was going to beat him.
Okay, so...
And then she didn't even run.
So here, again, you have the lesser of evils, right?
Sure. So, just as, one of the things that I'd love to get people to focus on, and if there was broader reach to this program, maybe someday we will, or somebody will pick up the idea and run with it or whatever, is this notion that, and we're still suffering, laboring under it to a certain extent, Richard, this notion that what we focus on is what goes on in November, when that's so clearly wrong and wrong-headed. If we want liberal candidates, we need to be focusing on what goes on in January and December of the previous year. We need to be finding the liberals and progressives who are intelligent and electable and get them on the ballot and running them as hard as we possibly can in primary challenges and beating the blue dog SOBs in primaries and then going up, and because liberal ideas should beat right-wing Republican ideas any day of the week, hands down. The only way the Republicans win in that fight is best, well, you know, he won't take away your Bible, and he's gay, and he won't let you have your guns to hunt.
Yeah, we have our wedge issue right now on the California ballot, which is the gay marriage thing.
Oh, and you knew that was going on the ballot. No way the right wing was going to let that not. But then the California Supreme Court opined the other day that it could stay.
Oh yeah.
No matter how fraudulently the signatures were obtained.
Of course, this is the issue that brings out the right wingers to the polls to vote Republican for president. That's the strategy that I believe I'm looking at.
Oh, sure.
Let me get back to my issue here, though, which is that I have an idea. Let's see if we can talk about it. And the idea is to pick some Democrats who we'd like to be rid of and dump them. You know, in other words, not vote for in this case, but actually vote against. And
you want to do that in November?
No, because I'd have to look at the people in advance, and it may be too soon, you know. But see, here we can recall politicians in California. I realize that there are many states where you can't do it. But like,
I know you recalled Pete. Not you, but you know, California recalled Pete Wilson. Yeah, we all learned that.
No. Actually, we recalled a guy named Gray Davis.
I didn't mean Pete Wilson. I meant Gray Davis. My bad.
You know, he was like Mr. Peanut. I mean, he had about that much personality. I don't even know why he got elected in the first place. But, I mean, he's a guy who just couldn't relate to anything or anybody. You know, it's like this health plan that I'm a commissioner for. We couldn't even get a budget out of the state. The guy was just so confused. He couldn't make appointments. It took him a year to make an appointment. So you know, when Schwarzenegger ran against him, he had something to run against. A guy with the personality of a stone, you know. But I mean, we can recall Feinstein. You see,
it would be lovely if you could recall Feinstein and Pelosi both.
Well, it would. Of course, I can't recall Pelosi because I don't.
That can only happen in the district, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I think the thing is, you know, we need to have examples. You know, we've been saying that we need to keep these people's feet to the fire. You know, we want action from our Democrats. And it doesn't look like we're going to get anything different than we've had before. So we need a strategy to light a fire under them. And the fire I'm thinking about is to bust them, you know, and make a lot of noise about it.
Well, that is some of what that is some of what's been going on. I think the one lady's name is Donna Edwards. She's out of Maryland.
Yeah.
And she is a progressive, liberal, and a lot of good progressives and liberals in this country got behind her, and they threw the Democratic incumbent Blue Dog out in the Maryland primary.
Yes. But I'm thinking about other ways of doing it. See, for instance, let's say take the case of Feinstein. I think that we should be ready to do whatever it takes to dump her. So if we can, you know, if the political machine, the Democratic machine, is giving her all this ammo, if they're going to be hard to fight, but we could dump her in the general election. By simply electing the Republican and making a lot of noise that we're going to do it. You know, in other words, we want to be rid of this person no matter what it takes and follow through. And if we manage to, while making a lot of noise, actually elect a Republican instead of the blue, you know, over the Blue Dog Democrat, I think it'll send a real chill through these politicians. Who assumed that...
I know the Donna Edwards thing has already sent a chill through the Blue Dog community.
Right. And Donna Edwards, of course, is where we're voting for.
But you're talking about... But what happens after you put the Republican in? Because,
We have to tell this person in advance that we want them to do what we want. You know, we want them to be liberals. I'll give you a case in point. There was a guy in New York named Jacob Javits. Ever hear of him?
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
He was a liberal. He was a Republican liberal. And somebody once went to Javits and said, "How come you're not a Democrat? Why are you doing this?" And Javits said, "Somebody's got to keep these bastards honest."
Yeah, no kidding. I agree. I'd love to see that situation, and then you go to him after he sees the demographics and sees that a bunch of liberals put him in office, or her, and go to him and say, look at him and say, "Listen, you know, good Republican, we put you in office to get rid of somebody who was voting like a Republican. If you vote like a Republican too, we're going to get rid of you twice as easily."
Beautiful. That's my strategy.
And
It may cost us a couple of votes here and there in the Senate, for instance, because we put the Republican in. But, you know, the frustration for me during Feinstein, you know, Feinstein didn't just become a senator. I mean, she didn't even bother running for Congress. She was put in San Francisco as mayor when George Moscone was assassinated.
Right.
And that was the start of her rise, you know, to where she is now.
She rose from a sort of blood-sodden good fortune.
Exactly. And she ran for mayor against Wilson and lost. And Jerry Brown was running her campaign, and she blamed the hell out of him for that. And then, shot right into this Senate thing. So she's got, well, anyway, I won't go on about that, but... I think my point is that we've got to be willing to vote for the worse of two evils in order to get the lesser, because...
Oh, but Ned, Richard, that is, I got to tell you that is profoundly dangerous, I would turn inside out. I'd be like something in a microwave if I came out of a voting booth knowing that I had just voted for, say, John 894 McCain.
Oh, yeah. But we're not talking... Yeah, okay, that's an extreme example.
Well, is it? Is it? Because
Well, I'm sorry, it's an extreme example because it's on the presidential level.
But that's my question. Is it? Because there are a whole lot of people out there, for instance, in that AstroTurf so-called PUMA movement, you know, Party Unity My Ass, they're real proud of themselves for coming up with that acronym, who are proudly declaring that they are going to, this is their words, not mine, stop Obama, because they're still mad about Hillary Clinton's campaign, and that they are going to stop Obama, and they're going to screw America by going and voting for John McCain. And that, you know, they're getting a lot of attention.
Okay, but see, that's not my strategy. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about at the senatorial level, at the congressional level.
I know, but what I'm trying to point out, Richard, is that it is easily expandable.
True. It could, you know. But see, okay, my frustration comes from one election after the other where this particular politician poisons the election and poisons the office. You know, and I took Dianne Feinstein because she's my personal nemesis. But you know,
no, I understand that, and but I also understand the other side of this coin, and that is, what? Let's do this sometime when it's not quite as critical, because I've got a lot of vendettas I'd like to see worked out by a veto-proof, filibuster-proof Democratic majority in the United States Senate.
Uh-huh.
Among other things, I want Joe Lieberman relegated so far onto the back benches of the Senate that you couldn't see him with a spotlight on him.
Well, he's a very interesting case.
I mean he's not going anywhere. He's still got plenty of time left on his term. He was reelected in 2006, so that means he's got till 2012. But the thing is, if we get... There's already a groundswell. Nothing can be done about Joe Lieberman under the Senate rules. Nothing can be done about him right now. He's stuck where he is with his little plum committee assignments. But come January 2009 and the reconstitution of a new Congress and a new Senate, if we've got a filibuster-proof majority, then we can start... Well, frankly, I'd like to see a palace coup that throws Harry Reid out, but that's a separate topic. But there is so much disgust with Joe Lieberman that there is actually a decent likelihood that Harry Reid will strip him of his power. Childish enough that I want to see that happen. I want to see Joe Lieberman on screen with that whiny, putrid little voice of his saying, "Well, the Democrats are being unfair to me." After he has
that mushy Connecticut sound.
Ooh, you know, just like a smashed up banana left in the sun, you know.
Of course. The question in my mind is, how's he playing in Connecticut?
Well, he didn't even play among the members of his party in Connecticut.
We know that.
He was elected by Republicans.
Ah, okay.
Republicans even turned their backs on their own nominee to vote for him as a means of putting a shiv into the Democratic Party in the whole United States.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's playing well enough, and he'll be there until 2012, unless God finds his little supply of lightning bolts.
Or is it possible to recall a senator in Connecticut?
I doubt it.
I don't know.
So, you know, but I really want to see that. And as a consequence of that, without, you know, I'm not trying to directly gainsay what you're suggesting, because I understand the very frustrated place that it comes from, Richard. But I'd like to see 62 or 63 members of the United States Senate have that D behind their name, no matter how D they really are. So it gives us an opportunity to do the pitchforks and torches march on Harry Reid's office and not ask him, but damned well tell him and to use a theory like what you're espousing for the next cycle to say, and if you don't, we'll bust you. Because that's the one card we haven't played yet. And at the end of the day, every one of these blue dogs knows it. That we do what you just described. We vote because we feel like we don't have a choice.
Yeah, I think, you know, in other words, what I'm getting at is sort of a whatever it takes movement. I mean, they're our people. You know, they're not the Republicans. They're supposed to be representing us. And, of course, they don't do it. We know that. But what tools are available to us? And it will be a risk, you know? I mean,
Frankly, if there are enough people thinking the way you are, Richard, that it shows up in the final percentages of the election tallies and Dianne Feinstein wins. But if she wins by a narrow margin or by a considerably narrower margin, I think you still get to make that march on her office.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what I was thinking as well. You see, because right now, if I call up her office, her people tend to be, you know, I don't know exactly why. Maybe it's me. But whenever I call up her office, it's very hard for me not to sound disgusted. And I...
That's probably because you are at your very base, most concrete level. And by base, I mean fundamental, not base as in, you know, nasty. At your most fundamental level, you're a decent human being. And so necessarily when you pick up the phone to call her office, you're going to feel your fundamental decency is going to make you feel a little bit nauseated at knowing what she has done.
Well, yeah, and they can't wait to get off the phone with me.
See, you've got Dianne Feinstein running for re-election this year. I've got Jay Rockefeller running for re-election this year.
No, I think she's early in her term.
Oh, is she? Okay, so we don't have to worry about yours for a while. But I very definitely have John D. Rockefeller IV running for re-election this year in my state.
He's such a disappointment, isn't he?
No, disappointment doesn't express what John D. Rockefeller IV is now.
I was being polite.
He is a quisling, okay?
Yeah.
What he did with regard to FISA is unforgivable. And I don't use that term advisedly. I use that term in its fullest meaning. It is unforgivable, Richard.
And that's what Feinstein just did here, you know?
Yeah. So I'm going to do something about it in November. My current strategy is, I guess, sort of moderate. Ugh, I hate it when I'm moderate. But I have vowed that I will not vote for his opponent, but I will not vote for him.
Yeah, and that's where I am with Feinstein right now.
So what I'm going to do is I don't straight ticket vote anyway. I mean, I may wind up voting a straight ticket, but I don't just punch that one little box. I go and I, because I'm obsessive compulsive about it and I kind of get off on voting, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to, you know, I'll punch whatever, you know, I'll punch for governor and I'll punch for this and I'll punch for that. And when I come to John D. Rockefeller IV, or some right-wing freakazoid that believes the Earth is 4,000 years old, I'll just move on and not pick either one.
And that's my strategy for Feinstein.
Because that's the closest I can get to none of the above.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is I need to call her office and say, you know, that stunt you pulled with the flag a few months ago. And Mukasey, you know, she brought us Mukasey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She was on the committee.
She could have stopped him. She could have stopped him, and he's a thug. She could have stopped him, though, and she didn't.
No, she says he's a really nice man.
Hitler loved dogs.
Oh, boy. So,
you know, Mussolini kissed babies.
Yep.
So that's what I'm doing. I'm doing a none of the above. Where governor of West Virginia is concerned, I've got the so-called Democrat, Joe Manchin, from a family that's never voted for any Democrat that didn't have the name Manchin behind it. And he's a big old coal whore. And the Repiglicans are running a guy who dropped out of school in the eighth grade. Not kidding. I don't know, I think he probably has to wear little earbuds that tell him breathe in, breathe out.
You're talking
breathe
about
in,
governor, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about governor.
Yeah.
So he's out of the running. And there's a green guy who is decidedly opposed to mountaintop removal, who is as smart as a whip. His name's Jesse Johnson, and I'm voting for Jesse Johnson. He's running on, I believe, the mountain party here.
Ah.
So I'm voting for him.
How's the mountain party?
It's like the Green Party. It's got a lot. Its issues are a hell of a lot closer to the stuff that I believe in. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I heard something said that I swore I knew I would never hear. And he says to me, "You know what? I'm about this close at this point. I'm about this close." And this is a guy who is, I mean, a Democrat's Democrat. You know, donor to the party, the works, all right? And he says, "I'm about this close to going and registering independent."
Well,
and frankly, in this state, so am I.
Yeah.
I mean, what have I got in the way of Democrats? I got a coal whore in the governor's office. I got an incredibly elderly senator who took nearly $500,000 of liberal money and then turned around and foisted on us Samuel Alito. Because if Robert Byrd had come out and said, "No way this guy gets my vote," Samuel Alito's nomination would have been dead, Richard. It would have been dead. And then my other senator, I got John D. Rockefeller IV, who, you know, really doesn't care if anybody listens in on our phone conversations. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know why he ever adopted West Virginia in the first place.
Well, because Arkansas was taken by another Rockefeller.
He's been in West Virginia a hell of a long time.
And, you know, he came here with the right intentions, and he worked in the VISTA program. And he, you know, did a lot of, and when the first time he ran for governor, honest to Pete, Richard, the first time he ran for governor, it's out there, you can find the quotes where he said strip mining must be ended in West Virginia. It is an abomination.
Oh, did he?
Yes, he did. And he got beat like a borrowed mule. And by the time he came back running for governor again, you never found a greater friend of coal.
Yeah.
Okay. My congressman, I may have to leave him blank too.
We want so much to believe in people, and then that happens.
Yeah.
This is happening with what's his name, with Obama right now.
Well, Cole did the same thing to John D. Rockefeller that the race issue did to George Wallace. You know, George Wallace's first run for governor, he wasn't frothing at the mouth about segregation or anything like that. And all during that campaign, his opponent called him an N-lover.
A what lover?
An N-lover. I won't use the word, okay? Called him that and just wore him out with it. And by the end of the campaign, when Wallace lost, he said, "I will never be out-end again." And so he came back, and it was segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And he was elected, you know, by the bigot vote, which basically meant at that time, Alabama. Same thing happened to John D. Rockefeller IV. He actually spoke the truth about what the coal industry was doing to West Virginia. He was soundly thrashed for it, and he learned his political lesson. So, you know, you hate to see that kind of thing.
Oh, indeed. And I have to say, probably like everybody, I don't understand the mind of a politician. I think that Karl Rove was correct when he said winning is everything. I mean, it is.
It is. Well, you know, you don't run it for your health.
If we get behind a candidate and he doesn't win, if he loses, we haven't gained anything.
Sure, there's that much truth to the situation, but I think you understand the politician, Richard, better than you let on. What maybe you have a hard time grasping is the ambition of a politician.
That's true. I do have a hard time with that because I'm not like that. I don't relate to that way of thinking.
Right, and that's understandable, because most people who are politicians, at least in America in the 21st century, as I understand it, I don't have any problem saying that Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe all could think me under the table. Okay? I'm okay with that. They were way smarter than I will ever hope to be. But you know what? My congressman, I'm a good 50 point, I'm a good 50 IQ points smarter than that man.
You talking about Rahel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's a nice enough guy, but I'm way smarter. And you know what? There's all kinds of Americans that are smarter than Larry Craig. And there's all kinds of Americans that are smarter than John D. Rockefeller IV. There are a lot of Americans who are smarter than any member of Congress in either house. Lord knows there are people who are smarter than George Bush.
Well, there are people who call your program who are.
Yeah, especially this program.
Yeah.
But and so, see, it's not a matter of intelligence. Getting into Congress is a matter of two things, and that is, A, profound amounts of money, and B, a level of ambition and yearning, almost pathological desire for power that is scarcely comprehensible to people who would just be happy if they could have a fair go in America.
You know, I think that there's some complication to this. I have a feeling that some people begin wanting their own public office out of a desire to truly do good for the people of the country. And then when they're in the process of trying to attain the office, they get a very cruel awakening, you know, that the people on the other side are not going to play fair. And they get a bit of cynicism put into them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I watch. I mean, it's like over and over again I find a politician who I really like, and then the guy turns out to be a jerk way down the road.
But please understand, Richard. These are politicians like you and us, as opposed to the differences we were talking about. The politicians are identical to us in that we and they all have feet of clay. See, I'm frustrated with my congressman, for instance, not because because he has proven to be a disappointment on an issue. But because he has proven to be such a disappointment on the issue that matters most to the future of West Virginia, and that's coal.
Oh yes.
You know, he has sold his soul for a ton of coal. If you get my meaning.
I absolutely do.
It's not just that. It's the stuff that he does to drive the nail deeper or to twist the knife. It's not just that he's pro coal. It's that he works actively against sustainable energy choices for West Virginia, like solar and wind. I mean, this is a man who introduced legislation in the House of Representatives to try to stop wind projects from going forward.
Oh, that's inexcusable. That's corrupt.
Yes, it is. It's as dirty as the day is long. And it's not just corrupt and dirty, Richard. It's mean. It's mean. And I still hold true to that very simple little bumper sticker out there that just says mean people suck.
Which they do. And he's got, he has made the choice in his own mind. I mean, on some level, he knows what he did.
On some level, on a very prominent level, he knows what he, on a level that's very readily ascertainable to him, he knows what he did. And that level is financial, because by doing what he did, by doing what he does, by advocating, say, a coal to liquids proposal in the reauthorization of the Appalachian Regional Commission legislation, he gets more money from the coal lobby.
Right.
And, you know, you can measure that.
Yep.
And you measure it in dollars and percentage of interest points and stuff that goes into the war chest. Because remember,
is there a website out there which tracks politicians? by their donors?
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. In fact, I've seen it. I just don't have it to hand.
Hey, Richard, I've got to
stop this or suspend this until the next time we get to do it because
all right.
I got a little bit of time left and a whole bunch of lights all of a sudden blinking.
Okay, go to the lights.
All right.
I hope they're people, Bob.
I do too. I hate it when they're buzzing noises or telemarketers or the sound of cruise ship horns.
Yeah.
We want to sail you to Orlando. Oh, I hate it. Richard, take care and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye now. Hey, what a wonderful little philosophical sort of that was. Okay, moving on. Nope. Moving on. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I just purchased the documentary Red State off of your website.
Oh, great.
So I'm always looking for new material. And I don't know, are you familiar with it at all? Or
I am a little bit. I have not seen it.
Okay. Well, I'll let you know. I'll give you a review at some point. So much good independent media work like that going on. I heard Sam Cedar the other day filling in for Mike Malloy, and he interviewed the director and producer of a DVD called Garbage Warrior.
I have something in my inbox right now to check out on Garbage Warrior. I'm hearing a bunch of really good things about it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. A guy building earth ships, they've been called, in New Mexico and other places, creating these sustainable homes out of, like, tires and old cans and using passive solar. I mean, he has gardens growing inside of them. They don't need any power, any fossil fuels for heating or cooling, and they're just beautiful. I mean, he'll arrange these old, like, bottles of different colors, and he'll create, like, stained glass works of art out of them. And fascinating story. And since his own project in New Mexico, he's gone worldwide, and he's gone to places like after the tsunami hit, he went and helped out there, built some models. Instead of, you know, these aid organizations were going to where the tsunami was and setting up these tin shacks where people were basically being cooked in and completely inappropriate for the setting. And instead, they're starting to build stuff on his model. on Cole, I don't know if you noticed, but I think he's a friend of yours, Larry Gibson.
Yes, Larry. Well, it's Larry's place that we were at up on Kayford Mountain.
Okay. I noticed there was an article republished on Common Dreams. I think it was in a Charleston paper, actually, initially. About people touring mountaintop mining removal sites, a lot more awareness growing about that issue. And Larry's been one of the people, you know, giving tours of his area. He made a remark about how, you know, he's just surrounded by these, you know, barren hellscapes that have been created, but his area still is forested. And he's like, you know, when this all settles and said and done, my home here is going to be like a big chia pet.
and that's about the size of it, Preston. What happened, that it was a beautiful thing. Larry thwarted the mountaintop removal goons by taking the family property there, and it's about 50 acres out of a mountainous region that's about 7 miles by 7 miles, if I understand the statistics correctly. This little 50-acre island he put into a family trust that can't be sold without the complete agreement of about 600 heirs. Every last one of them have to agree to it.
Interesting.
And so that preserved Larry Gibson's home. And Larry Gibson's place, it's called the Stanley Heirs Park. And what he's managed to do is entirely unique as far as I can tell, and that is, if you go to Kayford Mountain and you go visit Larry, you can do something you can't do anywhere else, and that is, on the ground, you can walk through the woods and look out on an active mountaintop removal hellscape. You don't have to fly over it. You don't have to sneak up on it. You can sit there and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it ought to be a national park. It ought to be a national monument.
Mm-hmm.
Because the coal companies can't do a blessed thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a place. What Larry does is very special because a lot of us can talk about mountaintop removal, Preston, but Larry is one of the only few people who can say, "Come on up, I'll show you."
Yeah.
Don't take anybody's word for it. I'll show you.
Mm-hmm. You know, we probably need people here in Colorado doing that sort of thing. And, you know, in fact, they may be, and we just haven't found each other yet. But we certainly have big coal issues here as well. There's a lawsuit being brought against, you know, I don't remember who was bringing it against who exactly, but it's to stop coal mining going on. And I think it may have been like someone with some wildlife commission or government body. I'm not sure, but basically what they're saying is that the Clean Air Act is being violated. And the lawsuit focuses on what's going on in national parks like Rocky Mountain National Park and Sand Dunes National mm-hmm. Park, and how the air is being befouled and the water and the streams and the lakes are becoming very acidic. And it's, you know, creating problems, killing off all sorts of species.
Well, you've got some wonderful progressive organizations going out there, Preston. I just had occasion to be in contact with one of them. And this is a fascinating group. Are you familiar with Progress Now?
I didn't know they were a Colorado group. I've heard of them, and I didn't know they're based here.
Yeah, progressnow.org, Progressive Solutions for Colorado. And their self-definition says that they're a first-of-its-kind organization with a mission to provide a strong, credible voice in advancing progressive solutions to critical community problems, but we don't do that on our own. We work as a communications team for the entire progressive community. We're a marketing department for progressive ideas, a campaign that never stops. We work year-round to challenge conservative propaganda in the media and make sure that progressive perspectives are heard. I talked just yesterday with the deputy director of the organization, a gentleman by the name of Bobby Clark, and we had a wonderful conversation about the upcoming Democratic National Convention, because they're involved with something called the Big Tent. And it's a two-story tent that's going to be set up in the parking lot of the building that they're in that is right next to the Pepsi Center, where they're inviting people who got more or less snubbed by the Democratic National Committee, who are liberal and progressive, to come and participate in and address issues pertinent to the Democratic National Convention at a venue right next to where the convention's happening. And it's a genius idea.
That is a good idea.
And we are busting our hump to get the horn there.
Well, good luck with that. Definitely. I had heard that you had suffered a setback.
Well, you know, you can't get into the Moose Lodge unless you're a moose. Or you know a moose.
Or you know the secret handshake.
Right, and I didn't apparently know the high sign, so I didn't get credentialed through the Democratic National Committee. So that kind of put our hopes of getting to Denver on hold, and yet, lo and behold, it was like something, it was like a miracle, okay? And I don't do the miracle thing very often, now do I?
No.
It was like a miracle. And it turns out that if the planets stay aligned and I stand on one leg and hold a finger in the air and my tongue just right, we might just get there. Our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch have decided that this would be a genius way to do outreach for our issue in a part of the country where folks may not necessarily know about mountaintop removal. And at the same time, since they partially sponsor the stuff on the horn anyway, We'll get out there, and if we can make everything work out, we'll broadcast live from the Big Tent. All the hinks and kinks are not worked out yet, but we're hoping that they can be.
Sounds like, you know, this all may work out for the better. You know, so often when, you know, one door closes on an opportunity, something else opens up, and
that's exactly how I've looked at it, Preston, because there's going to be a lot of people in that room who, or in that giant tent, whatever. There's going to be a lot of people there who the Democratic National Committee did not think were really worthy of getting in and rubbing elbows with the exalted pish-poshes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be talking about things that matter. They're going to be talking about health care. They're going to be talking about environmental toxicity and its effects on the local communities. They're going to be talking about how we take care of our children. They're going to be talking about educational issues. They're going to be talking about what really lies beneath this seemingly endless assault on a woman's right to control her own insides. Those are issues of race, issues of the workers' rights, issues relating to immigrant workers and so-called undocumented workers. All of these things are important to me as a Democrat, and 90% of them will not be touched inside the Pepsi Center. And you and I both know it.
You're right. Interestingly, Jesse Jackson was just here in Denver last week. He spoke at a couple of churches and did his program, Keep Hope Alive Radio, from the studios here. And it was such a contrast, the attack on him, them having that moment to beat him over the head with it, and versus the sort of topics he discusses week in and week out on his show, and not only discusses but gets on the picket lines for and sticks his head out for in many ways, and certainly not perfectly. He makes mistakes, and, he's flawed. Imagine that. Like we all are, totally. But on so many issues, and especially this show last weekend, he had a forum of people talking about the deeper issue, his comment, which he was very sorry for, but what he was trying to speak to. And he pretty much let them speak themselves about the prison industrial complex and, what we were talking about before about how, who should be told to clean up their act, so to speak, and, how the right wing loves to seize upon this sort of story and, how these stories can get applied to Africa, too, and how, it's their flaws instead of talking about systemic injustices. And exploitation, and talk about urban problems. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been taken out of urban areas, and a lot of these cuts in social spending have hurt minority communities and working class people of all colors. And problems have cropped up because of that. I think Frederick Douglass put it really well. I have this card from him that has a quote, and he said, "Where justice is denied, where poverty is enforced, where ignorance prevails, and where any one class is made to feel that society is an organized conspiracy to oppress, rob, and degrade them, neither persons nor property will be safe." Frederick Douglass.
Isn't that 100% bona fide truth?
Yep.
And it's funny how it's remained, it's funny how this, the great truths remain relevant.
Yep.
And for me, that encompasses great truths that don't necessarily happen in somebody's sacred book. The right wing has forever been, we got to post the Ten Commandments because they're universal truths. Well, okay, tell you what, I'll meet you halfway. We'll post the Ten Commandments if you'll post Frederick Douglass. How's that? And under Frederick Douglass, you can post a little Che Guevara. And under Che Guevara, you can post a little... Oh, Pancho Villa. How's about that? How about we post a little Marx and Engels? Because those are universal truths, too.
And Emma Goldman.
And Emma Goldman. And exactly. And the next thing I'm thinking maybe we don't need post them commandments. We got them in our heart now. And I got to share something with you real quick, Preston, because you brought up the issue of Larry Gibson and Kayford Mountain stuff. I want you to hear what Kayford Mountain did to somebody. This is our buddy Michael, otherwise known as Kid A in the chat room. And he says, I got to meet him and Jen when we were up on Kayford Mountain. He says, speaking of Kayford Mountain, I'm sorry I haven't been in touch with you since then. Been slammed. And he says, been kind of down in the dumps. Truth be told, I think I've been in mountain withdrawal. And he says, Jen and I were really happy to meet Agnes and you and the family. He said, the bands that played after you headed home were fantastic. And he said he started looking at the video that he, Jen is actually a trained videographer. And they and she's taught Michael a bunch of stuff, and they shot a bunch of wonderful footage. And he said, I think I got some good footage.
Great.
He said, I watched the stuff I taped on top of the mountain overlooking the mountaintop removal site in full-screen HD. He said, I was just dumbstruck all over again. I feel energized again. I have a lot of thoughts and ideas on our trip to Caford Mountain, and I just haven't had the energy to put them into text yet. The people there were so friendly. I don't think I've ever met so many wonderful people in a single day before. And this is the kicker, Preston. He said, I really didn't want to go back down the mountain that evening. Next year I'm bringing a tent. Mountain withdrawal. Going to work and doing nothing and making no difference and punching hateful numbers and dealing with all the office drones has been especially painful the last 2 weeks. I hope I'm not putting Michael in a spot by sharing this. He says, Oy vey. He says, and he refers to a wonderful song by Will Kimbrough called Horseshoe Lake. And he says, and he knows I love that song too. And he says that Will Kimbrough told him it's a real place. He says, but after two Saturdays ago, the song may as well be called Caford Mountain in my mind. He says, I'm not just looking forward to go back. I need to go back, and the sooner the better.
Great.
That's what that place does to people. Because when you see how beautiful the little park area is, and then you compel yourself to go and look out on what they've done to a bunch of other land that was every bit as beautiful, it gets under you like a hot foot with a really big match.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Our sacred places like re-energize us.
Yeah, it is. It's a sacred place.
You know, the Native Americans, you know, they're onto something.
Well, you know, this whole area that we call West Virginia was sort of. It was, I don't know if you'd call it a sacred place or a commercial place, because no matter how much they warred outside the region, many of the tribes had a standing agreement that once you got here, once you got into the paradise that was these mountains that were overflowing with life and life abundant and clean water and good hunting and places to grow food and places to gather herbs and roots and berries and all the things that made for a good life for them. You know, during that time, nobody fought anybody. And this was a land that wasn't soaked in blood, but was rather wreathed in peace.
Yeah, there's been some great archaeological, anthropological work along those lines. Howard Zinn writes about it in his Declarations of Independence. The subtitle is something like Challenging the Establishment's Orthodoxy, you know, which tries to convince us that, you know, the worst part of us are the inevitable parts of us.
Don't try to change it. You can't do anything about it. It's, you know, it's just life. You know, deal with it.
Will Kimbrough, he's somebody I've wanted to explore more of his music. I heard you play it as a bumper a few days ago.
Oh, that America, and there's, you know, there's music out since Americanitis, but Americanitis is a great place to start. And you know what's really wild is that he is he's the band master, or he's the guy who runs the band for Rodney Crowell, and their politics jibe, and just both of them great musicians, tremendous on the road, and if you don't have it, Will Kimbrough is your music. I can't put words to it. And that tune, Horseshoe Lake, you won't find it on Americanitis. It's on the EP that comes after, I believe. And once you hear it, you'll know why it speaks to Michael the way it does. Preston, I got to roll on though. Keep your fingers crossed that the planets will sort of come into alignment, and I'll keep holding one finger in the air and one foot on the ground and one up, and that everything will come together, because being able to report from there and talk to so many people and invite them onto the horn, invite them to share their ideas, it feels it feels like magic. And I don't do magic anywhere. I don't do magic about as much as I don't do miracles. You know what I mean?
Hey, I think we all need a little voodoo in our lives every now and again.
Vodun, the good stuff.
There you go.
All right. Take care, Preston.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Wow. Where'd the 3 hours go? They're almost gone. But you know what? What a wonderful 3 hours. I'm going to miss you guys until Monday. And we've got remotes coming up on Monday or on Tuesday and Wednesday. David K. Johnston, first at the Seneca 2 lectures in South Charleston, West Virginia, and then at Concord University's Beckley campus. That's Tuesday and Wednesday. I hope you'll be on board for those, and I hope everything goes technically correct and I don't wind up with egg on my face. In the meantime, have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget about the Rick Smith Show this weekend. Don't forget about Show 53. Now we're a year and a week of Night Sounds with Billy Shears. That'll come your way 9 p.m. Eastern Time. 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, the first go-through. And it'll roll all weekend in rotation with the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest-working, bravest people I know, who bring you the biggest part of the horn. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Peter Godbold. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest-working man in liberal talk, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.